Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Can you hear the bliss in my voice? I had a French fry today.
Yes, I had a French fry. Oh.
I guess we're on the way back to something approaching normal, but I'm really into this idea of shedding a lot of tonnage and making for a happier, slimmer, trimmer, fitter, meaner, more kick-ass and take names Bob. Yeah. And this is the last program. We're not going to be on the air tomorrow. Tomorrow will all be reruns, and then we'll move into the weekend schedule. There will be a brand new, fresh Rick's Place with Rick Goodner. There will be a brand new, fresh Night Sounds with, what's Peter calling? The world's most fabulous straight guy? Yeah. Billy Shears. All that coming your way this weekend. Billy is fast approaching his one-year anniversary. And what an anniversary it's going to be. Billy has done a whale of a job this last year, bringing together a whole bunch of people with a whole bunch of, I don't know. Billy's show is like, it's like political detox. That's what it is. It's like getting sort of, it's like one of those liver cleanses you buy at the health food store to make you feel a little bit better. After consuming stuff you ought not to consume. And after our weekly wade, through the political swamp, what happens on Saturday with Night Sounds is mighty refreshing. So we're coming up on 3 minutes past the hour. Like I said, taking the night off, tomorrow. Probably take the kids over to the carnival. The fireworks. But, do yourself a favor. If somebody says Happy 4th of July to you, answer them Happy Independence Day. Let's put the independence back in Independence Day. If the right wing and then it can hop up and down and bounce on their vestigial tails and scratch their knuckles running around on the ground and breathing through their mouths about the war on Christmas, I say we take back Independence Day. It is Independence Day. It's not the 4th of July. It's Independence Day. And I'm sorry. I still get all tingly looking at the document. And, at Christmas time, we read some passages from the New Testament about the birth of Yeshua. Well, tonight, we're going to have a run at the Declaration of Independence. But it's not going to be that same old, staid, tired, boring reading of the Declaration of Independence. This, my friends, is a gut check. because we're going to read the Declaration of Independence in conjunction with where America stands in July 2008. And let's go with a little background, too. I go to our good friend and sharpest guy on the Internet, certainly the sharpest satirist, but the sharpest guy in general in many, many ways, Eugene Finnerman, over at FinnermanWorks.com, your RDA of irony. A column that he first posted last year about this time called Good Old Boring Truth. Because it's worth remembering that, at some point in time, if you turn on right-wing radio, you're going to hear this screed. And if you go over to Snopes, you might find it. It's one of those viral Internet things that started early on. In fact, it preceded the Internet. It went around on faxes. It got Xeroxed in offices. And it's this fabulized version of, I remember hearing this in the Southern Baptist Church even. That's how old this is. This completely false, fabulized version of the signers of the Declaration of Independence and their history. And, of course, it comes from the right wing. And you will hear, I've heard it extolled on Rush Limbaugh in years past. Leave it to Eugene Finnerman to take a very sharp little pin and poke the hot air balloon that is right-wing historical revisionism. Hence the following. History is supposed to be true even at the risk of being boring. Of course, no one expects Hollywood to abide by that constraint. Mel Gibson's Martin Luther would have had a spectacular sword fight with Pope Leo X. As the 4th of July approaches, talk radio will be taking similar liberties with the American Revolution. The fire-cracking patriots of the airwaves will extol the heroic deaths and noble sacrifices of the signers of the Declaration of Independence. According to the script, quote, nine fought and died from wounds or hardships of the Revolutionary War. Five signers were captured by the British as traitors and tortured before they died. 12 had their homes ransacked and burned. This recitation is dramatic and poignant as well it should be. After all, who wants to hear banal lies and boring exaggerations? This right-wing radio rhetoric is based upon an anonymous essay circulating, as I said, on the Internet. It is a remarkable effort at distortion and fabrication. For example, nine of the signers did die during the Revolutionary War. However, none of them, not one, died in battle. Seven of them died of natural causes. Eugene notes the 18th century physician was far more dangerous than the British soldier. As for the two deaths by unnatural causes, Button Gwinnett lost a duel to an American officer, while Thomas Lynch drowned in a shipwreck. The script also fabricates the torture and death of imprisoned signers. Yes, five were captured, and all have since died. Yes. However, only Richard Stockton suffered any mistreatment. In November 1776, he was captured by American loyalists, otherwise known as the Tories, also known as conservatives. Stockton was fortunate that he lived to be imprisoned. Both the Tory and the Continental militias were known to scalp captives. The Continental Congress negotiated with the British to secure Stockton's release after a few months of imprisonment, but the squalid conditions of his confinement ruined his health, and he died 4 years later. The other captives merely suffered embarrassment. George Walton surrendered with the hapless garrison of Savannah. Edward Rutledge, Thomas Hayward, and Arthur Middleton were captured when Charleston fell. Rather than torture and death, they enjoyed the benefits of British snobbery. They were esteemed as officers and gentlemen, men of stature and breeding. Middleton was a graduate of the real Cambridge, not the pretentious upstart in Massachusetts. While the enlisted men were herded into the holds of prison ships, the celebrity captives were kept in modest comfort waiting to be exchanged for captured British officers. As the essay asserts, a dozen signers saw their homes ransacked or burned. However, the culprits were not always the British. In several cases, the attacks were by the signers' Tory neighbors. The conservatives of the time rather vehemently opposed the revolution, shall we say. Here's another awkward fact ignored by the essay. The home of James Wilson was pillaged, but by the revolutionaries, who suspected the Pennsylvanian of being a turncoat. The script goes on with its litany of distortions and evasions. It claims that Carter Braxton and Robert Morris sacrificed their fortunes for the revolution, quote, and died in rags. In fact, they went bankrupt decades later in land speculation. Let that be a lesson to the oil traders, but no. The essay reports that Lyman Hall, Arthur Middleton, Thomas Hayward, and George Wythe, suffered, quote, the vandalism and looting of their plantations. Yes, the British also freed the slaves on those plantations. An inconvenient fact, rather overlooked in this fictitious paean to liberty. What is the purpose of this travesty of history? Can we justify the American Revolution only by lying about it? There's no need for melodrama or special effects. It does not matter that George Ross died of gout in 1779 rather than dying of British bayonets. The truth itself is fascinating and important. The signers of the Declaration of Independence were audacious visionaries. They hoped to justify armed rebellion against the world's greatest power and most liberal government. As British subjects, they enjoyed a degree of freedom unknown to any other people anywhere else on the planet at the time. Indeed, when confronted with an unresponsive, myopic bureaucracy, these revolutionaries invoked the English right to resist injustice. We really can't emphasize that enough. Oh, they called it a human right. The Declaration of Independence takes that principle and boldly expands upon it. Freedom was not just an English idiosyncrasy, but the natural right of all mankind. And that idea was the American Revolution, and there's not a damn thing boring about it. But no, somewhere along the way, if you haven't already, you'll hear some damned untruthful, lying, dead from the neck up conservative telling you about the conservative family values of the signers of the Declaration of Independence, and how all they wanted to do was set up a new nation that would be safe for capitalism. I hope you don't think I'm kidding, because I'm not. You give the right-wingers, the Republican Party, and the conservatives, give them much longer, and pretty soon they'll have Adam Smith signing the Declaration of Independence, too. Really. So if one of those, if you've got some friend or neighbor or family member who forwards you this thing, and it runs through your email inbox this Independence Day weekend, do yourself a favor and do your neighbor, your friend, or your family member a kind, good service, the service of education. Send them a link to Eugene Finnerman's Good Old Boring Truth at FinnermanWorks.com. I think you might actually have... You might actually be able to make some change. And I'm not talking about the kind that rattles in your pocket. There is an abundance of news to go through this afternoon. But I want to, and by the way, a reminder, here in about 45 minutes, we will be joined by one of the most engaging folks that has ever been on this program in the past, and I'm tickled to death to have her join us again this evening, Loretta Knoll. And we'll be talking about the concept, because, you know, concepts of justice were central to what was impelled the signers of the Declaration of Independence to their decision to sign. We'll be talking about justice in a place called Alabama. And I don't think you're going to want to miss that. And I had, like I said, anytime you're talking with Loretta, you know that you're in for some Jim Dandy good conversation. Now, let's see. Where were we? Oh, yes. The Declaration of Independence, which I had here just a moment ago. You know, some days are diamonds. Where'd it go? Come on, help me. It's on one of these silly tabs. Ah, there it is. Like I said, this isn't just a boring reading. Or at least I hope it won't be a boring reading. This is an analysis. This is perhaps the front end of an intervention. In Congress, can't not do that, in Congress, July 4th, 1776, but if you're a Mark Levine listener, you know it was actually July the 2nd. They had to wait to get everybody pulled together. The unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America. Interesting, the word united is lowercase, but states and America are in uppercase. Kind of gives you an idea of where they were headed. When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. A very elegant way of saying, hey, we're not just doing something here. We've got reason. We hold these truths to be self-evident. In other words, these truths are so obvious that even a conservative could see them. That all men are created equal. That they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. That among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That was such a revolutionary concept, that alone could get you killed. I mean, we're talking about taking the idea of the divine right of kings and stuff like that out behind the barn and just whomping it. Governments derive their powers from the consent of the governed. Whew. That's radicalism. Man, I don't know if there has ever been a more liberal idea let loose on planet Earth than the idea that governments are instituted among men deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. And one wonders at the status, and if that is true, that governments derive their just powers, not their unjust powers, but their just powers, that they derive their just powers from the consent of the governed, then what is the status of our consent? It would seem that consent is not a constructive thing or something that is to be simply taken as read or for granted, that consent must be manifested affirmatively. Doesn't it? That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is in the... just a moment, please. A little telephone confusion. Sorry. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, in other words, violating the concept that the that the just powers flow from the consent of the governed. That is, it is in the right of the people to alter or abolish it and to institute a new government. We get a do-over, in other words, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Again, pure liberalism, pure radicalism. What's the point in setting up a government that's going to hurt you? The purpose of government is to secure to the people their safety and happiness. Prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light or transient causes. And accordingly, all experience hath shewn that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. That's another way of saying, you know, we will put up with a lot of crap before we have to have change. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. You read words like that, do you have any idea, is there any doubt in your mind that were they alive today, that people like Franklin and Jefferson would be wearing an orange jumpsuit in Guantanamo? I have no doubt whatsoever I don't know, maybe there'd be a siege of Monticello and George could, lob in a few mortar rounds till he was sure that Jefferson was good and dead. But they lay it all out there, talking about why they really didn't want to do this. And, you know, it was a struggle to get all 13 colonies on board. There were colonies that didn't see a problem with the king. There were colonies that were happy being good little Tories. And they had to be dragged kicking and screaming to independence. Such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their former systems of government. The history of the present King of Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. To prove this, let the facts be submitted to a candid world. Do me a favor. Every time you hear King of Great Britain or King or he, part of this gut check is that we're going to substitute George W. Bush for all of it, all of the references to the king and all the references to he and all the references to the abuses and the usurpations. See if it matches. That's the ticket. Let's check in on the phone real quick, however. Nope. Okay. First, he has refused his assent to laws the most wholesome and necessary for the public good. May I direct your attention to the Employee Free Choice Act, which would have granted real meaning to the freedom of assembly, which is guaranteed under the First Amendment to the Constitution. He and his cronies killed it. The Repiglicans, the Tories, the Conservatives. How about the vetoes? How about the veto of S-CHIP, the Children's Health Insurance Program? He has refused his assent to laws the most wholesome and necessary for the public good. Is taking care of our children wholesome and necessary for the public good? I would say that it is. I'd put to you that that's a no-brainer. But he has refused his assent to such laws. He has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance unless suspended in their operation till his assent should be obtained.
and when so suspended, he has utterly neglected to attend to them. Well, look at what the tax cuts for his richest 0.1% of this country. Look what his tax cuts have done to the economy of this nation. Look what they've done to the ability of states to respond effectively to the needs of the citizens of those states. Check. He has refused to pass other laws for the accommodation of large districts of people, unless those people would relinquish the right of representation in the legislature, a right inestimable to them and formidable to tyrants only. All you have to do is think back to the flight of the Texas Democrats from their state legislature during the phony gerrymandering of the congressional districts there, and boom, check. He has called together legislative bodies at places unusual, uncomfortable, and distant from the depository of their public records for the sole purpose of fatiguing them into compliance with his measures. Anybody remember Terry Schiavo? And Congress having to come back into session on Easter weekend to pass an ex post facto law to interfere in the private grief by a public legislative manner? Check. He has dissolved representatives' houses repeatedly for opposing with manly firmness his invasions of the rights of the people. That one might be a little bit tougher. Yeah, wait a minute, something's coming to me. Yeah. I think we can wedge this in on George W. Bush. Dissolved representative houses repeatedly. Well, he hasn't dissolved the Congress, but he has certainly rendered the Congress useless. Signing statements, anybody? He has refused for a long time after such dissolutions to cause others to be elected, whereby the legislative powers incapable of annihilation have returned to the people at large for their exercise, the state remaining in the meantime exposed to all the dangers of invasion from without and convulsions from within. There's two parts of that one. Refused for a long time after such dissolutions to cause others to be elected, whereby the legislative powers incapable of annihilation have returned to the people at large for their exercise. Then, the state remaining in the meantime exposed to all the dangers of invasion from without and convulsions from within. Do you remember when Katrina hit and there was a desperate need for amphibious vehicles in Louisiana and along the Gulf Coast? And we later found out that all of those amphibious vehicles had been sent to the desert in Iraq for Georgia's little war of choice against those poor benighted people? Check. He has endeavored to prevent the population of these states. For that purpose, obstructing the laws for naturalization of foreigners, refusing to pass others to encourage their migrations hither, and raising the conditions of new appropriations of lands. Ask the millions of undocumented workers who marched a couple of years ago how they feel about George W. Bush. Ask their families, ask their children. Ask the children who have been deprived educations having migrated here. Ask them. Ask advocates for the Latino community how they feel about a law proposed by George Bush that stated that so-called guest workers could stay here on sufferance so long as they didn't try to do anything nefarious like join a union. Check. He has obstructed the administration of justice by refusing his assent to laws for establishing judiciary powers. Wow, this one's gonna... Oh, it's a long fly ball, and it's out of here! I don't think I even have to comment on that one. He has obstructed the administration of justice by refusing his assent to laws for establishing judiciary powers. That's easy. Obstructing the administration of justice? Two words, Alberto Gonzalez. He has made judges dependent on his will alone. Oh, you know, I went over all this stuff before deciding to do this, and I thought I had some ideas for where it ought to go, but holy smokes! Did Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, and John Adams sit down and write this while wearing turbans with moons and stars on them and a crystal ball? You cannot be a federal judge in this country unless you are prepared to bow and scrape to the right-wing agenda as defined and espoused by George W. Bush. You know, once upon a time, well, the Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens, the so-called biggest liberal on the court, he was a Republican appointee. He was appointed by a Republican because he was a sharp cookie. Not because he would do the ideological bidding of some master. You cannot say the same of Sammy the Eel Alito or John Whitebread Roberts. By refusing his assent to laws for establishing judiciary powers. Are we not in the middle, smack dab in the middle, of this whole debate over FISA because George Bush has refused his assent to laws for establishing judiciary powers? The FISA Act itself establishes laws for judiciary powers, namely the FISA Court. But George Bush didn't want to go to the FISA court. He just wanted to spy on America willy-nilly, will ye nil ye, and tell the FISA court to go oomph itself. Check. He has erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. Need we further discuss the swarm of interns from the Patrick Henry School? Or the swarms of lawyers from what was it, Mark Levine? The 247th best law school in the country? The draw spunky matchbook, the back of the matchbook school of law as run by Pat Robertson? Yeah, the way they've run through the Bush administration and the Justice Department, I think it's safe to refer to that as a swarm. Check. He has kept among us, in times of peace, standing armies without the consent of our legislature. Ask the residents of New Orleans how they felt about having a private army by the name of Blackwater come in and disarm them during the most dangerous time of their lives. He has affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power. Now, part of the civil power is our judiciary, is it not? It is. And George Bush has acted to make the military independent of and superior to the civil judicial power by virtue of his little kangaroo courts and his phony tribunals at Guantanamo. It's an open question as to whether he yet gets away with it. He has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution and acknowledged by our laws, giving his assent to their acts of pretended legislation. a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution. Habeas corpus, anybody? Fourth Amendment? He's trashed both of those. And trashing that jurisdiction is indeed foreign to our Constitution. It is also unacknowledged by our laws. And he has indeed given his assent to those acts of pretended legislation. For quartering large bodies of armed troops among us. Please see Blackwater. For protecting them by a mock trial from punishment for any murders which they should commit on the inhabitants of these states. Well, it might not necessarily be these states, but there is no getting around the fact that mock trials have certainly been put forward for contractors. There are civil suits against Blackwater contractors and contractors from the other companies that are ongoing in the United States right now, that have been brought by people against the Blackwaters of the world, charging them with violations of the laws of the United States of America. Do you know what Blackwater's argument has been? Because these cases were brought by Iraqis whose loved ones have been butchered and tortured and maimed and, yes, killed by Blackwater. Blackwater's lawyers have argued, and I'm sure this just drives the right-wingers crazy because they have so much fun. I get one of these dumbass press release emails probably every other day or so saying, liberals want to impose Sharia law on blah, 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 blah. Blackwater has argued that in these cases they should not be subject to the sane and civil laws of the United States of America, but that in fact Sharia law should obtain. Because in that instance, Sharia law, they think, gets them off. For cutting off our trade with all parts of the world. Well, since George Bush came along, we're rather hard-pressed to trade with the rest of the world, since all of our manufacturing base has gone to the rest of the world. For imposing taxes on us without our consent. Look around your states, folks. Oh, George Bush may have said he was a tax cutter, but see if your property taxes haven't gone up because of the money not flowing from the federal government anymore. Or maybe they don't call them taxes anymore and instead call them fees, because the fees have gone up, too. Or licenses. For depriving us, in many cases, of the benefits of trial by jury. Trial by jury doesn't just apply to criminal cases, it applies to civil cases as well. Part and parcel of the Bush administration's overall agenda has been, well, you remember the soundbite. Too many trial lawyers have kept too many good OBGYNs from practicing their love on the women of America. Remember that? That was during the 2004 election season. And if you're a repig-lickin', if you're a conservative, if you're a Tory, by definition, you are opposed to the right of the people to petition for redress of grievances against those who have done them civil harms, like American corporations, or incompetent physicians, or chemical manufacturers who poison and foist cancer upon entire communities. Check. For transporting us beyond the seas to be tried for pretended offenses. I am stunned when I recognize the things that the signers of this declaration found to be grounds for dissolving a government when I realize that the government that they then created is now practicing those very same things. For transporting us beyond the seas to be tried for pretended offenses. Rendition. One simple, hateful word freighted with more agony than perhaps any other in this entire filthy, malevolent administration's run. Rendition. For abolishing the free system of English laws in a neighboring province, establishing therein an arbitrary government, and enlarging its boundaries so as to render it at once an example and fit instrument for introducing the same absolute rule in these colonies. I'll warrant that's a backhanded reference to Canada, although I could be proven wrong. Back then it was a backhanded reference to Canada. But Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, is an American military base, and our system of laws has been abolished there. Our system of laws is abolished also at Bagram Air Base and at Abu Ghraib. And they do, in fact, render it an example and fit instrument for introducing the same absolute rule into these United States. For taking away our charters, abolishing our most valuable laws, and altering fundamentally the forms of our governments. You answer this one for yourself. Would Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, or James Madison recognize the government today that they tried to establish over 200 years ago? Check. For suspending our own legislatures and declaring themselves invested with powers to legislate for us in all cases whatsoever, signing statement. Executive orders. Findings of the executive. He has abdicated government here by declaring us out of his protection and waging war against us. Today's news headlines include the latest jobless numbers. $4.10 a gallon gasoline. The war has been waged and is being waged against us. He has plundered our seas, ravaged our coasts, burnt our towns, and destroyed the lives of our people, Katrina Nuff said, check. He is, at this time, transporting large armies of foreign mercenaries to complete the works of death, desolation, and tyranny already begun with circumstances of cruelty and perfidy scarcely paralleled in the most barbarous ages and totally unworthy of the head of a civilized nation, Iran. He has constrained our fellow citizens taken captive on the high seas to bear arms against their country, to become the executioners of their friends and brethren, or to fall themselves by their hands. Have you read the articles? I'm not sure if it's true. The veracity is at least somewhat suspect, but that the articles that say that in Iraq, our military are being asked if they would be willing upon coming home to fire on their fellow citizens. Check. He has excited domestic insurrections among us and has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers, the merciless Indian savages. Okay. Tom, Ben, John, you screwed this one up, okay? Blind spot about the Indians. Whose known rule of warfare is an indistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions. That's okay, we can still work with this clause. He has excited domestic insurrections among us, Anybody remember the riot in Miami where all the right-wing Republican congressional operatives came and screamed down the vote counters until, in fear for their lives, they stopped counting the ballots in 2000? By God, I do. Has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers, the merciless Indian savages whose known rule of warfare, yada, 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 and undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions. How many experts, within and without the Bush administration, have said that George W. Bush's policies in places like Iraq and Afghanistan have made it more likely, not less likely, that we will again be hit with some horrific attack? Many of them have. So that one we'll give it, even though it seems kind of out of place, what with the merciless Indian savages, still with that we have to say check. In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Jesus, can there be anything more humble than Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid? I mean, really. I mean, we've played Pretty Please and Mother May I with George Bush for nigh unto 8 years, and every time they've played Pretty Please in the Congress, he's told them to sit down and shut up, or I'll kick you again. You want some more? Check. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. Check. The prince, whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant, is unfit to be the ruler of a free people. Check. Nor have we been wanting in attentions to our British brethren. We have warned them from time to time of attempts by their legislature to extend an unwarrantable jurisdiction over us. We have reminded them of the circumstances of our emigration and settlement here. We have appealed to their native justice and magnanimity, and we have conjured them by the ties of our common kindred to disavow these usurpations, which would inevitably interrupt our connections and correspondence. They, too, have been deaf to the voice of justice and of consanguinity. We must, therefore, acquiesce in the necessity which denounces our separation, and hold them as we hold the rest of mankind, enemies in war and in peace, friends. Well, it's not a spot-on match. But there were many of us here as George Bush prepared the slaughter of the people of Iraq. There were many of us here who prayed, who begged, who implored that the English people, the British people, the people of the United Kingdom, would rise up and refuse to participate with us in the rape of Iraq. And so many in their millions did. I will never forget. The massed crowds in London opposing the war and the occupation. And we know, in fact, that we do have friends. We, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America, in General Congress, assembled, appealing to the supreme judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions. In other words, this is not a joke. Do in the name and by the authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are, and of right, ought to be, free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved, and that as free and independent states, they have full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract alliances, establish commerce, and to do all other acts and things which independent states may of right do, and for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of the divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. Signed by order and in behalf of the Congress, John Hancock, President. Attest, Charles Thompson, Secretary. And there you have it. That they are absolved from all allegiance to George W. Bush, and that all political connection between them and George W. Bush's administration is and ought to be totally dissolved. That is indeed a revolutionary document. And the question I ask you, George will be gone in 6 months, 7 months. 7 months too many. The question I ask you is whether or not you will pledge, whether we will pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor to retrieve that for which so many bled and sacrificed and died. Will we retrieve it? Will we stop John McCain and, once he is in office, bring to bear the full weight of our demanding force on President Obama to restore unto us the Republic birthed 232 years ago tomorrow? You know how I feel about it, I suspect. I know how you feel about it. The question is whether you can take this and spread it. Whether you can explain to your neighbor or your friends or your fellow church members that the Declaration of Independence is in fact a living document. See, there's a reason that people like Fat Tony Scalia mock the idea of a living constitution. Because if it's nice and dead, it can be ignored, twisted, bawdlerized, parodied, as they have so frequently done. The wingnuts often like to point out that the Declaration of Independence is not the law of the land, and it is not the law of the land. It is the egg from which the law of the land hatched. Without these noble words, there is no Constitution. Without these words of genius, there's no executive power, no legislative power, There's no judicial power. Without the Declaration of Independence, we become an anachronistic exercise in futility. So, the question is, can you make this be a living thing for others to whom you would like to prove that George W. Bush is every bit as rotten, every bit as tyrannical, every bit as diabolical and despotic as the last time we had to throw off a George? Can you? We shall see. We shall see. About 5 minutes before the hour, we're going to take a little musical interlude. And when we come back, we'll be joined for some conversation by Loretta Nall, someone that I know cherishes the Constitution as much or more than anyone else, and probably holds great passion for the Declaration of Independence as well. You are listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You are listening to The Horn. Happy Independence Day.
Fathers, they had pride. It wasn't perfect, they fought and died. 200 years of struggle for equality. Now it looked more like a monarchy. The hall for justice did once reside has been sold out and replaced with lies. It's all money, power to the few. How long until they come for you? And you say that it can never happen here. And you say it can never happen here. Burn habeas corpus, tear up the writs, rubber stamp Senate of hypocrites. Those new detention camps weren't built for show. Posse comitatus is next to go. And you say that it can never happen here. And you say that it can never happen here.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
All right, let's get hour number two of this last night before the Independence Day holiday edition of Head On started. What do you say? You know, I told you, oh, I guess it was back early part of June, I told you about one of my favorite women from American history, a lady by the name of Anne Royal. She was one of those really strong women, came up out of the, born in Pennsylvania, grew up in the hills of what is now West Virginia, had a hard scrabble way ahead of her, and reinvented herself long into her life. But traveling to Alabama and writing, writing a travelogue that just sold like hotcakes. Along the way in Anne Royal's life, she made a lot of politicians' lives absolutely miserable, even going so far as to confiscate John Quincy Adams' clothing as he skinny-dipped in the Potomac River and holding his clothing hostage until he would agree to fund the newfangled telegraph machine. She absolutely wore out the right-wing religion industry of her day to the point that a Presbyterian minister had her thrown down a set of stairs. That's how bad they hated Anne Royal. Mother Mary Harris Jones marched through these coal fields and coal bosses all over Appalachia would, you know, put their elbows on their desk and their foreheads in their hands and go, "Oh, Jesus, not her." And that was the 19th century and the 20th century. In the 21st century, Alabama has someone whom I consider to be a good friend. Alabama and the South in general and the religion industry and right-wing repig-licking freaks and religion industry fundamentalists put their heads in their little pointy heads in their little evil hands and go, "Oh, Jesus, no," every time they get skewered by Loretta Nall. Loretta is with us right now. Hey, Loretta, how are you?
Bob, I'm excellent. How about yourself?
If I was any better, I'd probably be eating fried green tomatoes out of your garden.
You know, I got a lot of green, but you don't like fried green tomatoes. I like the ripe ones. I tried some fried ones last year. That just ain't my thing. I'd love to send you some, but I don't know if they'd make it to West Virginia.
Not this time of year. They'd be nice and ripe and squishy by the time they got here. But I tell you what, I've seen the photos of your garden on your blog, and I'm jealous beyond comprehension. And
I picked my first mess of purple hull peas today, and we ate like hogs.
Oh yeah, and
good man.
And it's, you're supposed to. And is there any prettier thing in a garden than an okra blossom, Loretta?
No, they're absolutely beautiful. You know, they're closely related to the hibiscus plant. It's evident when they bloom, but man, they are so gorgeous and delicate and just you know, but like awe-inspiring almost.
I'm sorry, we have a predilection on this program for food porn, so we'll get past that real quick. But fresh out of the garden in high summer in Alabama, But I don't know how
you
got time to attend your garden, Loretta. You're wearing people out down there.
I am really trying hard to wear some people out in here, but you know, you have to take a break from it at least once a day and go commune with Mother Nature and the plants just to get your head straight. So the garden actually helps in my adventures in Alabama.
Well, there's plenty to talk about, but one of the things that I know that you have taken a very close interest in, it goes without saying to anyone who's been to nullforgovernor.blogspot.com that you are passionately involved in the idea of reform of this nation's incredibly moronic, stupid, idiotic drug laws.
Oh, absolutely. That's what I've dedicated my life to.
And along those lines, you also pay close attention to the judicial process in regard to how it treats drug offenders, especially in Alabama.
Correct.
And you've come across an interesting little case involving a bust of a circuit judge's son?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And is it Clay County, if I got that right?
Yeah, Clay County, Alabama. It's actually the town where I grew up, a little tiny speck in the road named Ashland, Alabama. It's an absolutely beautiful place, and I think that someday it's going to make like a a hippie mecca out of it. I see, you know, left-leaning people coming, and it's right at the foot of the Chiha Mountains, and it's just an absolutely gorgeous town. It's really, really, really small. Everybody knows everybody, you know what I mean. I'm sure there's a lot of towns in West Virginia that are exactly identical.
That's about 90% of here, but yeah.
Yeah, we have a judge there, Judge John Rochester, who is notorious for the way that he sentences drug offenders. I've sat in his courtroom over the course of many years as an observer and as, you know, a family member of defendants. I have two brothers who are colossal screw-ups. God bless them. I love them, but, you know, they have to go to court a lot. And so, they're not dangerous to anybody. They like to drink, and they like to do things that they shouldn't do, and so they're often in trouble. Judge Rochester he's so horrible when it comes to drug defendants. I've seen him sentence, you know, one truck driver with no prior convictions to 5 years in prison, for simple possession of meth, which, you know, I don't like meth. I've done it once. It's awful stuff, and I don't understand why people do it, but that's just me. I went to church with a kid all my life. You know, he was from a good family, and he was never in trouble, and he got caught with one Xanax without a prescription, and Judge Rochester sent him to prison for 5 years.
Say what?
No
priors, 5 years for a Xanax?
5 years for a Xanax, yes. He is a hardcore man when it comes to drug offenses. And
I guess there's a reason why Rush Limbaugh's never been found in Clay County, Alabama.
I guess so. You know, the thing is, you know, this judge is a Democrat. I'm going to go ahead and get that out. I know, you know, you're a left guy and you're a Democrat, and I'm really disappointed in the Alabama blogosphere. The right-leaning blogs are carrying the story, but the left-leaning blogs are not. And to me, right is right and wrong is wrong. It doesn't matter if you're a Republican or a Democrat.
My values really don't change based upon whether there's an R or a D behind a name, Loretta. But it sure does seem like the people that are decidedly entrenched in that identification, theirs do. And that sounds like what you're describing right now.
Right. And then in Alabama, you got to remember there's not a lot of difference between a Republican and a Democrat. I mean, a lot of the judges that are Democrats now were Republicans 5 years ago. So they just woke up one day and decided, you know, maybe I'll go to this party. So you never really know what you're getting with a judge. The letters beside their name don't really mean anything. But what happened was Judge Rochester also likes to, somebody's coming before him for a hearing, you know, for probation, for, you know, asking for early release, or, you know, even before they get, if somebody takes a drug case to trial, he lines them up against the wall. You know, and he makes them go and take a drug test before he gets to that pesky jury trial phase. He tries to bypass it any way he can, just keep people in jail. He's a real monster, in my opinion. He's a tyrant to the other people who are in his courtrooms, to the attorneys. You know, he's really despicable to the defendants. And a lot of the lawyers that I know in the town where I currently live have told me, look, I charge double just to take a case if it's going to be in his court, because I know I'm not going to win.
And it's a small county, and you got little county lawyers. So election time rolls around, and you're probably hard-pressed to find anybody that would dare to run against him, because they will pay a dear price if they come into court against, in front of him, even representing their clients. He sounds like that kind of a vindictive Martinet. Have I got it right?
You've got it absolutely right, Bob. And so here's what happened with him, with his son, actually. His son, I think he's about 26 years old. And so back in March, the Ashland Police Department arrested John Alexander Rochester in the Ashland City Park, where the little kids play on the monster truck and tractor toys and hang upside down from the monkey bars. They arrested his son trafficking methamphetamine, trafficking cocaine, first-degree possession of marijuana, possession of paraphernalia, and one count of possession of a controlled substance and one count of distribution of a controlled substance. And so the kid went to jail there in Ashland for about 21 days, was bonded out by his mother for a total of $20,000. On all of those charges, and I happened to come by all six of the case action summaries. I got some good friends in the legal community in Alabama who are willing to jump in and help me out with the paperwork end of it, right? I can make accusations all day, but without the paperwork to back it up, you know.
Sure.
So I came by all six of his case action summaries, and I came by five additional case action summaries that were heard, or that were people that were arrested on the same or similar charges within the same time frame. So what's happened here is he went to jail for 20 days. He was able to bond out by his mother on property bond and go to, I heard he was in a treatment center in Mississippi, and he has to be in treatment as part of the bond conditions until his trial comes up, which should be, you know, end of the year, fall, winter, something like that, when the grand jury reconvenes and hands down the indictment. The judge who set his bonds is the district judge in Clay County, who is excellent friends with the circuit court judge, John Rochester, his father, and he should have recused himself from that case. He is subordinate to the man's father, and he did not step aside, and the case was not moved out of the county. No, you know, no unbiased judge was brought in to handle the bond cases.
And just for a second, let me just ask a couple of questions, if I may, please, Loretta.
Okay.
One. You said his mama bonded him out on a property bond. If I recall what I've read correctly, everybody else has to be bonded out by two people.
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
But one's good enough for the judge's son.
Right. The sheriff can, according to what I've read too, and it's, you know, people that work in the county jail up there, and if the court system have been posting on my blog, you know, some of these little tidbits that supposedly only he had six charges, but only four were required for him to get out, to be bonded out. He only had to be bonded on four. So I'm not real sure if that's, you know, true or not, but I haven't been up to Clay County to look at the paperwork. I'm going, you know, hopefully I'll get up there next week and see. And also, you're supposed to have two, like you said, two people are supposed to sign on a property bond. They stack the bonds. I'm not sure what that means. I mean,
if they stack the bonds, I think that means that the money stands good for all the bonds. It's like the money sits on top of the stack of the stack of charges.
All right, I got you.
But you know, you mentioned the guy who bonded him out. I would assume, Loretta, that the legal system in Alabama is and the canons of judicial ethics are at least somewhat similar to the canons in the rest of the country. And you know, judges, and that extends to the one you're talking about, both the circuit and the district judge. There's a little line in there that says a judge shall, not may, but shall, avoid all appearance of impropriety.
That's exactly right, Bob.
And it doesn't say shall avoid impropriety. It says appearance of. That means, you know, even if it looks like a rose, if it smells like, you know, what you put on your roses, you get away from it.
Right on.
And so it should have been automatic. There shouldn't have been any thought involved in this process, but you're telling me that it don't work in Clay County.
It doesn't. Well, no, it doesn't work in Clay County. I mean, they thought it didn't work in Clay County, but they didn't know I was watching. They didn't know that I've got, you know, inside people telling me what's going on. They never saw me coming, which is wonderful. They never do. You know, just when they think their rice paddies are safe, in comes Loretta in the black ninja uniform. So, what I'm doing, you know, following the case, the comparison, the bonds, I got five cases, like I said, of people who were arrested around the same time on similar charges, and all of the bonds in those cases were at the very maximum that they could be set. And in some cases, they were like $50,000 to $70,000 over the maximum bond recommendation. And it was, you know, for basically the same charges. So we have a judge who should have stepped aside and never had anything to do with it, who somehow, you know, set the bonds for his boss's kid at the, you know, basically the very minimum bonds and for, you know, stricter charges. So, or for, you know, worse charges than what the other people had. And so it's clearly evident that there's something going on there. So now a lot of people have started calling Judge Simpson's office and calling the Clay Times Journal, the newspaper. I got on them pretty hard. You know, I've written them for two solid weeks asking, did you report this case? Did you write a story on this case? There's nothing on your website. Although there is something on the website about a little Mexican guy getting, you know, wrapped up for getting some weed to the post office. It's like the top story. Big deal. You know? And I'm like, dang, you know, if I were living there, I'd be more worried about the judge's son selling meth at the park than I would about some little Hispanic guy getting some weed from back home, right?
Yeah.
Thank God they can get weed from back home. How would I get mine if they didn't? So,
now, you got to remember, Agent Fred's probably listening to this, Loretta. So.
Well, they know I smoke weed. I mean, you know, it doesn't mean I got any on me now. And if they want to pull up and look, then they better have a warrant that's good, because last time they didn't, and I won my case. So they know I don't play. I don't lie about my drug use. I smoke weed. I enjoy it, and I smoke it as often as I possibly can. I don't sell it on the playground.
You're not standing there in the city park next to young Master Rochester saying, "Hey, kid, come here. The first one's free." Oh God! Well, I haven't lived back down home in a lot of years, Loretta. But sounds like some things don't change.
Well, they didn't until I came along, and you know, change is happening here very slowly. So the next process, you know, people from the Clay Times Journal, the little bitty newspaper in Clay County, is, you know, owned, edited, and published by a guy who's on the county commission. And so I wasn't surprised to not see the Rochester case there, but they did finally write me back when people started bombarding them with phone calls and emails saying, you know, they said we did run the story, but the website was down at the time and we're real busy with the next issue and we'll, you know, we might dig it up, kind of send it to you when we get some time.
Dog ate it.
I've talked to a couple of people that live in Clay County, my mom and a couple of friends that I have up there, and they're like, yeah, we saw that. It was the police blotter was all that around. They ran his name and address, what he was charged with, along with, you know, all the other people that were arrested that week. But, you know, to me, that's not enough. You know, the police blotter is not enough. I mean, that is a very big media story. You know, if a little Mexican guy, like I said, you know, getting weaned at the post office is huge, then what about the judge's son selling methamphetamine on the playground? I mean, that's a much bigger story.
Well, you talk about a big story. There's some fairly big media outlets, comparatively speaking, in Alabama. You got the Birmingham News. You got the Montgomery Advertiser, the Mobile Register, the Huntsville Times. Any movement among those, or is it all just crickets?
Baby, it's a blackout. It's a total media blackout. The other day, and I included this, you know, in my original post about the story, was, you know, there's a guy in Birmingham who got caught with 9 pounds of weed and, you know, a rifle and a handgun. I mean, it was top story on the news. His face, you know, all the wonderful evidence they had against him. And I'm like, how come this guy, and his bond was $500,000. This was in Birmingham now, not Clay County, but it, you know, just happened the other day. And I'm like, how come he gets his face blasted all over the news and he has to pay, you know, $500,000 to bond out? And he wasn't selling weed on the playground, and it was just weed, you know, come on. So
no meth, no coke, no crack.
And, no, just some innocuous little plant material there.
Now, you mentioned that young Master Rochester was sending was hustling meth and coke and so forth in the city park there. If Alabama's like other states, I imagine somewhere in the recent past the legislature has gotten positively apoplectic about the measurement between, say, the scene of a crime in a church or the scene of a crime in a school.
We have the absolute worst zoning for that. We have within a 3-mile radius in this state. If you're within a 3-mile radius of a public housing complex, of, you know, a park, a school, a church, anything like that, it's automatic 5 years on each charge. But the trick is the prosecutor has to ask for those enhancements to be imposed. It isn't automatic. And that was something that I wasn't aware of until all this came up. So, the prosecutor in the case, obviously, you know, he had something to do with setting the bonds as low as they were set. He, you know, probably is in line to run for being the judge when Judge Rochester retires. So, he's not doing his job either. He's in on it too, but he actually has to ask when he takes the judge's son to trial that those enhancements be imposed. And I really just don't see that happening.
Have you or anyone else, started any, ethical complaint proceedings as far as, with the bar or the Judicial Commission of Alabama, Loretta?
I have started my complaint process with the Judicial Commission. I'm still, you know, filling everything out, getting some lawyers to run over it to make sure it's, you know, it's on par. Because I'm not a brilliant legal mind. I know right and wrong, but I don't know a lot of legal terminology. Although I did write my own complaint against the judge in Tallapoosa County back in 2004, and I won. They sanctioned him for yakking in the media about stuff he wasn't supposed to be talking about regarding my case. And so everybody was really shocked by that because it's so rare that, you know, somebody actually wins a ruling against the judge. So I have a little of experience with the Judicial Inquiry Commission. And so I'm filing. At this point, I can get Judge Sampson. I can get him. I mean, it's clear as day that he violated Sections 1, 2, and 3 of the Canon of Judicial Ethics of Alabama. There's just no way around it. Judge Rochester's going to be a little bit harder. I can't prove that he asked him to. You know, I don't have that kind of evidence. I mean, I can suspect, but you know, the thing that I might get Rochester on is that he didn't tell Simpson to step aside, which, being the presiding judge and, you know, the superior judge there, it was his duty, because Simpson is a member of his court, to make sure that, you know, everything was above board. And so he didn't do that. So there may be something there. Like I said, I'm talking to my legal folks to see if there's, you know, that has any teeth to it. I'll be filing one against him. And I'm watching the case. I'm waiting for, you know, the grand jury to reconvene. I'll be going to the hearings just to see what happens. My brother, I have a brother who's an alcoholic, and he's received 2 10-year sentences from Rochester. He served a total of 8 on both sentences, and he's out now. So, you know, it's personal on a lot of levels. I know a lot of poor kids that I went to school with, you know, and like Clay County, like I said, it's very rural. It's very poor. There's absolutely no industry there. It's just a small little spot in the road. And a lot of people use drugs and alcohol because, hell, there ain't nothing else to do. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's
yeah.
It. And so I know a lot of families that he has helped to destroy. And it's like we pay for the justice system here, the criminal justice system, and everybody should be treated equally. And like I said, you know, I'm not paying for me to go to jail and the judge's son not for same or similar charges. I'm not paying for that. I don't think anybody else is either.
Well, obviously Judge Rochester has to recuse himself from the trial of this case. That just
correct.
Goes without saying. Has he made any moves along those lines?
Not that I'm aware of. You know, like I say, the grand jury won't reconvene until the fall. And when the case comes up, you know, he'll obviously have to recuse himself. The thing to watch there is, are they going to move it out of the county entirely? Which, I think it should be moved to the furthest corner of Alabama where, you know, Judge Rochester is not known and doesn't have any power to, you know, to influence the outcome of the trial.
Yeah, Jackson County, Lauderdale County. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, anywhere north, south, anything like that. You know, we're kind of in the middle in Clay County, but surely there's a county here where nobody knows him. He'll have to. But then if he does, you know, he does, and they don't move it from the county, but they bring in a different judge, I mean, we're going to have to watch that very closely, too. Because judges have, you know, the brotherhood thing going on, just like police officers and
sure.
DAs and things like that. So we have to be careful who is brought in and know, you know, clearly up front what connections they have to Judge Rochester, so that we know we're getting a fair trial.
Well, if the bonding issue does turn out to be a real stinker, are you also contemplating asking that your sitting district attorney not be allowed to do the prosecution?
I've been looking around to see if there's actually a procedure for getting a prosecutor removed, and I've been unable to find anything. That would, you know, I know that you can get a judge to recuse himself, but I don't really know if there's a statute in Alabama. I haven't been able to find a statute that says, you know, a prosecutor also has to, unless there's, you know, a direct conflict of interest, like it's the prosecutor's kid or, you know, something like that. But I'm still looking for that. I hope that we could get the prosecutor, you know, taken off the case, because I don't think, you know, his efforts will be as pure as the driven snow to put the kid in jail like they are with everybody else's kid.
And you're sort of at sixes and sevens because it's not like you can run down and ask for an attorney general's opinion.
No. Attorney general would, you know, I'm not sure what he would say.
No, he's busy, but he's busy rounding up the sex toys right now. I mean,
he's probably swimming in them by this point, Bob.
Have you, that is, all of this is deadly serious and deadly in earnest, and it needs remedying all of this business in Clay County and with Judge Rochester. Is the story getting any movement nationally? I wanted to bring you on to talk about it just because it didn't look like it was, and I was hoping we could get a little more exposure to it. But anybody else asking any questions from around the rest of the U.S.?
No, I've had a number of people email me and say they contacted, you know, national news about it, ABC and NBC, all the big national news corporations, but I haven't heard directly from any of the national news people. I don't really know why. I guess maybe it's not as big a story to them as, you know, Britney Spears Tootie or, you know, Lindsay Lohan drunk driving or any of that good stuff they like to put out there. And
yeah, it's all forget about it, Jake. It's Chinatown. Yeah. Oh Lord. But see, that's one of the things that drives me a little bit nuts, Loretta, is that it's the stuff that happens in small county in small counties in Alabama and small counties in West Virginia and Tennessee and Nebraska or, you know, where have you, that empower these people to go on and do other wicked things. I mean, For heaven's sakes, Roy Moore started out in a little, pardon my mouth, pissant courtroom in Gadsden.
Mm-hmm.
And look, and look where it went from there.
Yeah. Roy Moore is, I don't know if you, a few weeks ago, HALT, and I can't remember what it stands for, but it's, you know, Against Legal Tyranny, came to Alabama and did a study of our court system, and we received a D. You know, we should have received a flat up F minus, right? But we got a D. And, you know, it's like people know, you know, but they don't, I mean, and this is the perfect case to show that, you know, we're not all equal. I mean, if you've got connections and money and your parents can buy you a treatment bed, then, you know, you can get out of jail for pocket change on very serious drug charges and go, you know, lay up in a treatment center till your trial. The prosecutor, you know, is your daddy's friend. You know he's not going to try to hang you. I mean, hell, what have you got to worry about, right? But the rest of us, you know, we were hung.
Well, it's my understanding that Judge Rochester doesn't even much care for the idea of rehabilitation and treatment, does he?
You know, I've been in his courtroom, and I've had other people, you know, tell me the same thing, you know, reaffirm what I thought I heard but couldn't quite believe. And that's when a lawyer will stand up and say, Judge, you know, you allow a bond or, you know, let him out on his own recognizance to go to treatment until court comes up. And Judge Rochester's favorite line is there's a SAP program in prison, and SAP stands for Substance Abuse Program. So he's all gung-ho about, you know, you're going to jail, and if you need treatment, you'll get it there. He doesn't really allow... you know, and maybe in one or two cases he has, maybe somebody that contributed to his campaign or something, or some commissioner's daughter or son got in trouble, and he allowed them to go to treatment. But the regular common people that appear before him, you know, every week, they just don't have that option.
There's an obvious question that just arose out of what you said. This is an election year. Is he up for election?
He is not. I think he has another 2 years before his term expires, and somebody posted on my blog, one of the pro-Rochester people, they're getting very unhappy with my dogging of this case, and so somebody posted that after this term he's going to retire, but not before we smack him around a little bit and leave him with a, you know, with a mark or two on his record.
Well, sounds like they're earned as far as I'm concerned. Loretta, all of this, well, like I said, it should be... These kind of things do need national coverage above Britney Spears or Lindsay Lohan or, you know, Britney and Lindsay together getting attacked by a shark or, you know, anything like that.
God, wouldn't that be good? I'd watch that.
I'd pay.
I'd pay too, Bob.
Put it on the closed circuit. We'll all go to the theater together. But there's some zaniness. There's some zaniness at work in Alabama. And Troy King, your attorney general, is without a doubt an evil, self-made SOB. But
oh yeah,
what? How? I mean, I read the accounts between your work and that of Alapoet. Can't remember his name right offhand.
Steve Elliott.
Okay, yeah, Steve Elliott. What is there a groundswell in Alabama? Are people realizing that they've got a real, I mean, you know, crazy man in the attorney general's office?
You know, I think people do. I can't name one person that likes him, Republican, Democrat, Independent. I can't name one newspaper that likes him, one blogger that likes him. He's an absolute loon. If you see a picture of him, you can see the insanity dancing right behind his eyes.
Oh, he's got that 50-yard stare of the true believer. He really, really does.
Yeah, he's a frightening guy, and he's also pro-death penalty, and the UN came and evaluated Alabama's death penalty and stuff and said, you know, we're like the worst possibly in the world. And he's like, no, we're not, and I'm not going to finish reading the report. And as soon as the state, you know, the Supreme Court lifted the ban on executions back a couple of months ago, boy, he was lining them up to go. And he, you know, the DAs here in Alabama hate him. They, you know, they called a press conference a few months ago. There was a DA in Shelby County. There's a case a few years ago where there was two young black guys who robbed a pawn shop. One was 16, one was 18. The 18-year-old did the killing. The 16-year-old did not kill anybody, but he was involved. He had a gun.
Felony murder.
So, yeah, they were both sentenced to death. And then the Supreme Court ruled that you couldn't sentence anybody under 18 with the death penalty. And so the DA in Shelby County where this occurred, you know, had to agree with the Supreme Court and then go back and you know, argue for the guy to be sentenced to life without parole. I mean, that's all he could do. He said it's not right to have him there. You know, he's not the actual killer of these people, and what he did was horrible, and the Supreme Court says we can't execute him, so life in prison. Well, Troy King jumped all over it, and, you know, it was another Republican DA, of course, Troy's a Republican, and said, you know, he's this horrible person, you know, he doesn't care about the family, he thinks, you know, he's on the side of the murderer, and just, you know, on and on and on. And so all, I think there were like 50 DAs in Alabama called a press conference and spoke out against, you know, Troy King, who is, you know, the state DA, or basically, he's their boss. And so nobody likes him. And he has this thing about sex toys, about adult novelty devices. And, you know, we got a lot of problems in Alabama. We're poor, you know, we're going hungry because food prices are high and gas and war. And, you know, there's lots of crime.
Education issues.
I mean, it goes on and on, Bob. You know, everybody knows about where Alabama is on everything. And that's near the bottom. Mississippi's about the only one that we can ever top at anything. So we're 49, they're 50. And back, you know, last year around November, Troy King came out. There was an adult novelty shop in Birmingham called Love Stuff that he wanted to shut down. And so, you know, a judge in Birmingham went and toured the store and said, no, you know, the law's too vague, and so I can't, you know, I'm not going to shut it down. I'm going to leave it open. And so Troy says, well, I'll go back before the legislature in 2008 and try to make our anti-obscenity laws tougher, which they couldn't be tougher because, you know, the Supreme Court's already ruled that, you know, Alabamians don't have a constitutional right to sexual privacy, which I'm not even sure what that means. So that means I have to go have sex in public, I guess. But so anyway, I got really ticked at the Attorney General for saying he was going to waste our time and our money in the legislature trying to get, you know, rubber dongs banned. And I decided, you know, you stupid bastard, excuse my language, if you want to focus on sex toys, then all right. And so I started a sex toys for Troy King drive, and I kicked it off by mailing him an inflatable, penetratable pig because, you know, I didn't want to encourage him to breed outside of his own species. No human blow-up doll there. And so the media here just loved it. They ate it up. We got lots of stories on it, you know, lots of editorials calling for a repeal of the ban. And anyway, I named her Trixie, and he actually admitted that he got it. So we just had a lot of fun with that. It's some great editorial cartoons, which I'm sure you've seen, and we just humiliated him to no end. And so when the bill came back up this year, I was in the Judiciary Committee meeting that day. You know, not a peep from Troy King. He didn't even stick his head in the door, and it was just like he wasn't even there. So he pretty much shut up about sex toys when he got bombarded with sex toys from all over the U.S. And, you know, a big thank you to anybody that's listening who might have sent one. So it was really a great thing.
I was talking about it the other night, and one of the smart alecks who listens to this program immediately emailed me and says, does it have to be new?
And said what?
Does it have to be new?
You know,
to send
I'm
him a sex toy.
If it wasn't new that he would take DNA from it. He doesn't believe in using DNA to, you know, release people in from prison that aren't actually guilty. But I'm sure he would employ a DNA test and trace it back to the source and charge you with, you know, biological weapon of mass destruction. Or so I wouldn't recommend sending something used. Although, you know, I considered it myself. Yeah. I'll be honest.
Hey, busts out all CSI if he thinks he can solve a crime. Lord, you know, you can just imagine what the Sherlock Holmes novel title would be if it was cut loose to write it. Well, we sure did enjoy. I saw Steve's post, and that led me to yours, and that's why I sent along the pastor from Montgomery to you. And now I got the note from you before the program that's been cross-posted over at Pam's House Blend, and my Lord, we may have a little hit on our hands here, and this thing's just.
Absolutely. You know what? Weird Al Yankovic ain't got nothing on you, man. I laughed, and I am still laughing at that song. Send me a sex toy. I can't buy one in Montgomery. I love it. I've been singing it ever since, and everybody I've sent it to said, damn, that's catchy, man. I can't quit humming it. I think, you know, you might be onto something here, and it's absolutely hysterical, and I just can't hear. I can't listen to it enough. John Fox did a wonderful job singing that, and the lyrics are just, You couldn't have put it any better. You know, you really just nailed it with the, you know, hog tie me and bungee and fix it just so. I mean, that's perfect, man.
And the beauty of John Fox is that I can say to him in just plain old English, it ought, you know, this is what's going on in my head, because, you know, Lord knows I start singing and I can hear people, you know, clicking off the stream even as the first notes are coming out of my mouth. But John just picked it up and ran with it. He did say at one point, he said, even though there was nobody in the house, I felt a little funny about singing some of those lyrics.
He told me on my blog that when you send the lyrics, he wasn't sure he would be able to sing all the way through them without just falling over laughing. And I'm not sure I would have either, because every time I sit down and try to sing, and I just start laughing so hard. I can't even get through the first verse.
Well, it's a year now since the Right Reverend Aldridge went off to his reward. Was there a big stir in Montgomery over that, or did it just quietly go away?
Well, they reported the story. It's kind of weird how that happened. They reported, you know, Reverend Aldridge was found in his house, and the police thought he died of asphyxiation, and immediately that was the first story, and there was nothing juicy in it. But I said, you know what, that was autoerotic asphyxiation. I bet you $1 million. Boy, people jumped all over me. They're like, oh, you're crazy. He was a great guy. I went to church with him. I'm a young man. I slept in his bed. He wasn't into anything like that, and slept with him and this and that. And I said, okay, I'm not going to say anything else, but you'll see. You're going to see when the autopsy report comes out what I'm talking about. And lo and behold, you know, the autopsy report comes out. And
you got more than you ever dreamed of.
He was in two rubber suits. Now, hell, how do you even get in one, much less two? See, I think somebody else was involved, because I don't see how one human can actually get into
you can't,
two
it's
rubber
hard
suits,
to,
rubber drawers, and hog tying.
Yeah, see, right? That's the hog tying did it for me, because it's hard to hog tie yourself. It truly is.
I would imagine. I've never tried, you know, but it's like, gee, you know, I don't.
You know, even the magicians in Vegas, you know, they can get out of all the stuff, but somebody else has to put them in it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think somebody skedaddled. But it was, you know, I read up on Reverend Aldridge's history. You know, he was a youth minister.
Yes.
And you know, I feel about sex much the way that you feel about things like marijuana. You ain't hurting nobody,
right?
More power.
I wasn't condemning him, you know. But if you're a Baptist minister in Alabama, you know you've been preaching against it, you know, and you know that, you know, it's just the story, because he was a preacher is what made it so wonderful. And you know, when the autopsy report came out, people had a lot of fun with that, you know, on the Montgomery Advertiser forums. And then after that, it just died. You know, there hasn't been really anything else said about it. It just kind of went away.
But the thing is, as far as I'm concerned, Reverend Aldridge is the poster child for everything that's wrong with Attorney General King.
Right, sexual repression. You can't express yourself, and you have to hide it, and then you wind up hogtied in two rubber suits with a dildo up your butt dead, right? Because you can't, you know, you can't be open about it, because it's just not accepted here. We still are all abstinence only in our schools, and we have, you know, high rates of teen pregnancy.
I was going to say, how's that teen pregnancy rate coming along?
It's pretty bad. You know, Mobile has abstinence only, and even more so than the teen pregnancy, Alabama ranks second and third in chlamydia and syphilis. And Birmingham has more syphilis cases than anywhere else in America. They are number one. So we're number two and three in chlamydia and syphilis, and all of this, you know, abstinence only isn't working. And Jesus, you know, I think sex toys ought to be mandatory. You get them with your birth certificate and Social Security card. Why ban them? I mean, hell, obviously you're not going to get chlamydia and syphilis.
They can save, they can save your life. it's like somebody should have sued the coroner and insisted that on Reverend Aldridge's death certificate it said, you know, the cause of death number one, autoerotic asphyxiation. Cause of death number two, hypocrisy.
Exactly. Exactly. I feel sorry for Reverend Aldridge in a lot of ways, and I don't mean to make fun of him, but you know, Jesus, I just cannot help myself, because it's just one of those stories that you can't bypass that. You can't leave that alone.
Well, you're not taking joy in the misery of his family.
No.
And
no,
you're not taking any mirth out of the people who loved him and feel a sense of loss out of him, but you want to look at him and say, don't you understand why he died? Don't you understand that the religion industry killed him as much as asphyxiation did?
Exactly.
You know, what he did can be safely done and not result in death, but it can't be safely done.
That, you know, Jesus would forgive you for that, wouldn't he?
I don't know that Jesus would feel like he had to.
Right, it doesn't seem like anything that, you know, there's anything wrong with it. It's just natural. Well, I mean, it's not natural to me what he did, but I mean, you know, it's natural to some people. So, it's, you know, there's no reason to condemn the guy. It's just a funny story, and religion did kill him. You know, like I say, you know, we're abstinence only, and we have, you know, some of the highest rates of teen pregnancy and sexually transmitted diseases and unwanted pregnancies than anywhere in the country.
My goodness gracious. Well, let me ask you before we ring off, Loretta, any predictions for the political season as it rolls, as this tidal wave of cesspool filth that we call American politics rolls over Alabama between now and November?
I think that, you know, on a national scale, the election is Obama's to lose. I think everybody's sick of the John McCain, George Bush, you know, old, mean, white people running stuff. And, you know, Obama won Alabama, which was shocking. I was absolutely floored when he beat, you know, Hillary Clinton here. I don't know that he'll carry Alabama in the general election. He might. I have not decided who I'm voting for. I'm not voting for John McCain. I mean, let's just say that. You know, Bob Barr has joined the Libertarian Party. He now works for the Marijuana Policy Project as an advisor. He's turned completely around on the drug war. He's, you know, with me on my constitutional rights. And so, you know, I'm looking at a Bob Barr, being a Bob Barr supporter potentially. I went and saw Obama at the Bartow Arena in Birmingham back when he came a few months ago. And he says some things that frighten me. You know, I'm not a Democrat. I'm kind of an independent. I believe in small government, and I believe, you know, in my Second Amendment rights, and I believe in ending the drug war. And I haven't heard him say a lot that really, you know, grabbed me. But, you know, if it comes down to being a really close election between McCain and Obama, then I'm probably voting Obama. I'm definitely voting Obama
If the polls in Alabama in the last week, because, it, you know, there's a chance this kind of stuff could happen, Loretta. I read one last week. There's single digits separating McCain and Obama in Texas.
Yes.
And the same is obtaining in Mississippi. And if it's two or three points in Alabama, are you going to sort of scratch your head and go, yeah, well, you know, as far as just trying to beat McCain?
Yeah, I think Obama would be an exponentially better president than John McCain. I'll just say that outright. I mean, there's no way I'm voting for John McCain. If he was the last man on earth running for president, hell, I just wouldn't vote. I think, you know, Obama has a lot of potential. I think that, you know, under an Obama administration, the work that I do and the work that my colleagues do, we have a much better chance of getting him to address the issues of, you know, black men in prison, minorities in prison, minorities, you know, eat up by the drug war. We have a way to, you know, hopefully, you know, he'll be more willing to entertain what we're trying to do than John McCain will. And so ultimately, and I know it's going to be a close election, I'm probably going to wind up voting for Barack Obama. I just really hope that my vote won't be in vain, you know, for another 4 or 8 years of, you know, people going to prison that don't really need to be.
And, you know, there's some pause for reflection in the last week, and I'll be the first one to acknowledge it. When he came out and said he thought the faith-based initiative was the neatest thing since sliced bread, to paraphrase, I kind of had one of those full body shudders run over me, you know, one of those, you know, kind of things.
Boy, that don't sound good.
That stings. Yeah.
I have to wonder, though, how much of it is, you know, he's trying to win over some of the right, you know, the religious right, and, you know, how much of it is pandering to him, how much of it is real. You never know with any candidate.
Do you hear a whole, because I've heard a whole bunch of it here in the hills. Do you hear a whole bunch of that? Did you know he's a Muslim business down there?
Oh, and he don't pledge. He don't put his hand over his heart when the pledge, and he don't recite the pledge, and he won't wear his flag pin, and, you know, on and on.
His mama was an atheist.
Like the Gadsden Times the other day. There wasn't even an editor's note attached to it. Some guy wrote in with all the things that we just said, and they just printed it. They didn't say, you know, no, it's not true, this, that, and the other. I mean, they just ran it. So, and that's Roy Moore country. So that really doesn't surprise me that it, you know, living in Etowah County where that letter was printed. There's a lot of that here. You know, there's all of the right wing, you know, ignorant, redneck, horrible. Not the bad kind of redneck, because I'm probably about as redneck as they come, but I'm a good redneck.
No, I'm a proud hillbilly.
You know, I love being a hillbilly, but being a hillbilly don't, you know, necessarily mean that you hate everything that ain't white, right? You and I know that.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a lot of that in Alabama, and there'll be a lot more of it as the election draws near. And sadly, you know, a lot of people here that vote Republican or that vote period aren't educated, and they don't bother to, you know, seek out facts for themselves. They just sit and watch Fox News, and that's as good as the Bible to them.
Or, yeah, or whatever the preacher says on Sundays, good enough. You know, it's good enough for Paul and Silas. It's good enough for me. Well, let me.
I don't know that Obama will win here. I hope that he does. I don't want John McCain to win for sure. but like I said, you know, he won the primaries here by a pretty good margin. And, that was when I said, you know, actually when he won Iowa, I said, wow, you know, could be something to this guy. And then when I saw him, at Bartow Arena in Birmingham at UAB, I mean, that packed the house. There were 11,000 people there to see the first black man really having a shot at president speak. I mean, the audience was mixed. It wasn't, you know, more one color than the other. And, so, you know, I think he's got a shot at it, but we really got to get him off this faith-based initiative money
and execute,
pulling out of Iraq right now. And there's no way in hell we're going to go to war with Iran, and we need to fix our prison problems. He needs to start saying the right things before I can say, okay, I'm voting Obama, no doubt.
Yeah, I know exactly from whence you speak, Loretta. Let me ask you one last question before we go, because I think I hear your phone dying. There's some sort of a beep. Maybe it's Agent Fred. You have gotten some national media notoriety. You've appeared on Hannity and Combs, I think. Is that correct?
Hannity and Combs, Keith Olbermann. I've been on, you know, Fox and Friends. Been on, you know, ABC, NBC. I've been on all of them. Yeah.
So, as just a little yammerhead hillbilly here in the hills, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Is Sean Hannity as big a horse's ass in person as he comes across on TV?
I'll tell you what, when I was on the Hannity and Combs show, I hate the way that they'll ask you a question and then they won't let you answer it. You know, they argue back and forth amongst themselves and they drown out the guests. And so sorry, that was my dog. So when I was on, yeah, he was nice, you know, leading up to the interview, we were talking back and forth, said he was friends with Rick and Bubba. I told him I'm a John Boy and Billy fan myself. But he wasn't too bad until the interview started. And even then he wasn't bad because it was an issue where, you know, a child molester got 5 years probation unsupervised after he admitted, you know, raping and sodomizing boys that he'd been adopting for years. And my spin on it was, you know, people who smoke weed in Alabama are doing life sentences. You know, and they'll never get out. Here's this guy walking around. And so there wasn't really anything he could be ugly to me about. But, you know, the fact that he likes to cut people off and talk over them, you know, he tends to be kind of a horse's ass, yeah.
Okay, well, we refer to him here as a life support system for a haircut, but, you know. Well, Loretta, I tell you what, I wish you the very best on all fronts. I hope you remain a mighty sharp thorn in Troy King's side, and I hope you'll update us, and I'll keep an eye on the blog to see what's going on with Judge Rochester. If we can be of any help, please let me know.
Absolutely, Bob. I'll keep you guys posted. I'll pop you an email as things, you know, start hopping down here with the Rochester case. And, you know, if I send Troy, you know, an inflatable love you next time, or, you know, who knows what I'll send him when he texts me off again, I'll definitely let you in on the game.
All right.
I appreciate you having me on. Y'all have a happy 4th.
You too. Happy Independence Day, Loretta.
Indeed. Good night.
Bye now. And that is our buddy Loretta Nall. 100% genuine original. And you know, if it may have just slipped past you, but there is some truth, considerable truth in what she said, that and it's one of the problems that we as Democrats have, liberals, progressives, and that is that there's an old saying in Alabama that when it comes to Democrats and Republicans, there's not a dime's worth of difference between the two. Now, individually, you can make the case that there is a whole bunch of difference. But I remember being down there during primary season in 2006, and damned if the commercials on TV, the Republicans and the Democrats weren't trying to out-family values each other. Honest to goodness, he's a Democrat with family values. He's a Republican with Alabama conservative family values. Well, I got conservative family values, too, and I'm a Democrat. And maybe as we approach this Independence Day, did I do the math right? Is it 232 years tomorrow? Maybe it's time that we use the Declaration of Independence as what it was intended to be used for. And that is a reminder and an energizer and an inspiration that this country was not founded on anything approaching conservative values. This country was founded on a brand of liberalism that would probably be found shocking to most of the people who call themselves liberals in this day and age. The members of the Continental Congress. We live in an age when they don't drink and drive, and we got drunks against mad mothers and mothers against damn drunks, and these are people. Eugene Finnerman can straighten me up if I'm wrong, and I'm sure he will. God bless him. These were people who, because the water wasn't fit to drink, these were people who were pounding down a gallon or two of wine a day. There's every chance in the world that the Declaration of Independence was written and edited by people who were under the influence. Okay? And we haven't gotten to laudanum yet. That's a liquid opium suspension for those of you keeping score at home. And, well, mercy sakes. I'm not saying that the key to liberalism is booze. It's not. But how many liberals out there do you think would be willing to say, our founding fathers tippled a tip? Because they did. But we don't like to talk about it. And we don't like to talk about the bigotries and the biases that were inherent. We don't like to talk, if we're pressed on it, we can, but we don't really like to talk about the bowing and scraping that had to be done by some of the colonies to bring the likes of South Carolina into the fold and getting them to sign off on the Declaration of Independence. There were deals made, okay? It's not like they presented a draft and said, you forgot, you need to dot that I and cross that T. As Mark Levine pointed out in great detail last night, yesterday evening, there were significant linguistic changes made that weren't stylistic. They were substantive. And one of those was slavery. And slavery hangs as a pall over the genius of Thomas Jefferson and the forthrightness of George Washington. It hangs as a pall over the heads of every signer of the Declaration from Virginia, from North Carolina, from South Carolina, and Georgia. It hangs as a pall over those who compromised the very beings of human souls in order to obtain the unanimous signing of the Declaration of Independence. One may argue, perhaps, that independence itself would have been a valid price to pay to see colonial America stripped of its slavery before it could expand into places that would later be called, in, for instance, 1819 Alabama, and places that would be called by the, 1790s, Tennessee and Kentucky, and continue into Mississippi and Louisiana, Texas and Arkansas, Missouri, Oklahoma. That's one of those questions that the historians love to sit around over a little bourbon and branch water and argue about. It's all a rather elegant and academic approach to Mr. Peabody and Sherman and the Wayback Machine. The only problem is that it has no effect.
and that because of the compromises that were reached prior to the second day of July 1776, an entire segment of the American population, for no other reason than the color of skin, continued to live in bondage and a form of abuse, that we would go to war in a foreign land over today. Well, if that country in the foreign land had oil under it and the abuses of slavery. The average life expectancy of an African slave in America was in the 40s. And a slave who reached the age of 60 was deemed ancient. And that is a mark upon our country that will never be erased. That, like Lady Macbeth, we can walk around saying, out, out, damned spot, but the spot goeth not away. And the question for us as we contemplate our independence and what our independence means is whether independence should be something that is and has been continuously expanded. Those who call themselves liberals, who compromise in the 21st century on something like the rights of people to their own sexual orientation, their own God-given sexual orientation, and their rights not to be discriminated against in the workplace. Those who compromise on that compromise in blood, the same way that in the humid and dusty days of early summer in Philadelphia, well-dressed men, well-dressed, wealthy white men compromised in blood in the birth of this nation. I want no part of it. I want no part of such a compromise. And when I heard Senator Obama the other day say that in his faith-based initiative, faith-based charities receiving federal funds would not be allowed to discriminate against people based upon their race or their age or their gender, I listened to the litany of things that are federally protected classes. But out of his mouth did not come the words sexual orientation. And I felt a rather sickening lurch in my gut. I did indeed. So, those are all the underpinnings, or all of those things are underpinnings of the Declaration of Independence. That document means far more than firing up the smoker on the third. It means ever so much more than fireworks or a day off. As we have so often criticized the right-wing religion industry and said that they should stop thumping on their Bible and try reading it a little bit, we would be well advised to take our own medicine and, as we have done this evening, read all of the Declaration beyond the noble words and ask, where does this nation stand today? Have we secured the rights and liberties of every American? Does every American enjoy the same rights as any other. That among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And no sober reading of the Declaration and its preambulatory statement of intent, no sober reading of that can come up with a determination that, yes, we have achieved it. All we can say is that we're still trying. Some cannot even say that they are still trying, because some, even as we speak, are trying to foreclose and forestall such rights. Heavy business, I suppose. Heavy business indeed. But that is where we are. And so we will we'll take a little break. You know, of course, you know the phone number. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333, email rolls into Bob at headonradio.com. We'll be back with the final hour of the program here in just a couple of minutes. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn.
final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Hot diggity, 3 minutes past the hour. And I mentioned that we're going to celebrate Independence Day a day late. We're going to go down Saturday to Cayford Mountain in the Stanley Ayres Park for the Mountain Keepers Music Festival. Stanley Ayres Park is a little oasis of still green land surrounded by the desecration of the earth that is mountaintop removal. The Mountain Keepers Music Festival is a joint presentation of the Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition, OVEC, the Student Environmental Action Coalition, and the folks who partially sponsor everything that's on the horn, Coal River Mountain Watch. It's going to be a hoot. I said I would be firing up the smoker. The reason I'm firing up the smoker is I'm going to take a couple of pork shoulders and even a brisket that we're going to smoke low and slow starting tonight. I'll do the rub and let all the rub work its way into the meat tonight. Fire up the smoker tomorrow, and then come Saturday we're going to load up and head for the Stanley Ayres Park and the Mountain Keepers Music Festival. If you're anywhere within striking distance, I encourage you to come along. It's a free concert. Donations are appreciated, but not mandatory. Great little lineup. Saturday, a wonderful musician, a friend of ours, Jen Osha, will be performing between bands. But the Saturday lineup, Jim Savarino, he's played festivals from Iowa to Texas. He'll be playing Appalachian roots and contemporary folk songs. 2 p.m., Corporate Orange plays. Elizabeth Leprell comes on at 3. The Pitzers, Keith and Joan and Jake Pitzer, they play a mix of traditional and contemporary music with just rock-solid lyrics, Appalachian tunes, Celtic roots music, their own original work. Then at 5 p.m., a band out of Knoxville, Tennessee, the Lone Tones. And they're quite popular in their regionally, and they'll be playing at 5. Sunday, July the 6th, Willie Dodson performs between band setups. Noon brings Molly Andrews. 1 p.m., Jason Neff of Slate Dump. Mary Daly at 2, and another friend of ours, T. Page Dalporto, at 3. There's going to be a covered dish potluck supper, hence what I'm doing with the smoker. And anybody who wants to is welcome to camp Saturday night. You'll need to bring your camping supplies and water and any snacks if you plan on staying the night. It's a drug and alcohol-free event, so it's kid-friendly. That's where we're going to do our weekend celebrating. If you want to see the lineup and get directions to Cayford Mountain, the easiest thing to do is go to mountainjusticesummer.org, mountainjusticesummer.org, and it's under the heading of events. So I think, if you can get there, you'll come away mighty glad that you were. You'll meet some wonderful, wonderful people, and you'll get a chance to put visual impact with your own eyeballs to what we talk about here so very, very much. And it is impossible not to be moved. Let's see. Mountain Keepers Music Festival, I believe, also has a MySpace page. MySpace.com, MT Keepers, K-E-E-P-E-R-S, Fest. MT Keepers Fest. The directions, you'll get there. You just decide you want to be there, and you'll get there. It's going to be a mighty special event. I'm looking forward to it a whole lot. I know Agnes and the kids are, too. Now, it's about, by the way, thanks to Kid A from the chat room, Michael, for reminding me to remind folks of that event. Kate writes in, she says, Bob, you almost slipped into Alabama drawl. Should have kept Loretta on another 20 minutes. You'd have been dripping. you'd be dripping sweetie from your chin. Love that Bama music accent. Okra and fried green tomatoes and maybe some mac and cheese with bacon, maybe some ham and red eye and biscuits. God, stop me. It's getting porn here. Who needs sex toys? Just give me a big old piece of pan-fried chicken and white gravy with lumpy mashed potatoes. I told you guys would love Loretta. So, where we go for the rest of the program tonight? We can go to the phones if you want to chime in. Looks like we won't hear from our buddy Preston this evening. Preston is on the road, he says, to Omaha. Doing a little holiday visiting. Wrote in to wish us a happy Independence Day. Says he's going to see his sister in Omaha. Notes that Omaha was featured on Current TV because of the freak storm that hit a couple of weeks ago. They were just up to their necks in freaks. No, that's mean. George Bush was nowhere near Omaha. No, they got hit by a really, really ugly storm a couple of weeks ago. In about 2 hours, they got an arc's worth of rain, straight line winds knocking down trees and power lines. Preston says he'll check in next week and let us know what kind of progressive activities happening in Omaha. He says there's a vegetarian restaurant there that hosts a progressive film festival and reminds us that Malcolm X was born in Omaha. Tough day for a lot of families in the United States, a lot of military families in the U.S. Promises have been made to military families in the United States. Promises have been routinely broken that were made to military families in the United States. And another one has gone on the list of broken promises. The Defense Department today announced that it has extended the combat tour of 2,200 Marines in Afghanistan. They did that today after spending months, literally months, promising the families that the unit was going to be home on time. We're talking about the 24th Marine Expeditionary Unit. It's in southern Afghanistan. And they're stuck there for another 30 days. They'll come home in early November rather than October, according to Marine Colonel David Lappin. Announced that today. I can only imagine, I cannot state with any knowledge, I can only imagine the heartbreak of the families of those 2,200 Marines as they realize that the Bush administration has lied to them again. the Joint Chiefs of Staff and its chairman, Admiral Mike Mullen, are in a bind. They're in a pickle. As recently as a couple of days ago, if you're on the phone, please stay there. I'll get right to it just in a second. The Joint Chiefs of Staff admitted via Mike Mullen that he's stuck. He's screwed. June turned out to be the deadliest month of the Afghanistan occupation yet. And for the second straight month, the number of troops killed in Afghanistan exceeded the deaths in Iraq. Yesterday, George Bush came out of his spider hole, and he said, it's been a tough month in Afghanistan. I think my golf handicap's probably gone up by 4 or 5 points, because I haven't been able to get out and golf because of the deaths we've had in Afghanistan. Joint Chief Chairman Mike Mullen, on the other hand, put it a little bit more bluntly. He said, and I quote, I don't have troops I can reach for, brigades I can reach to send into Afghanistan until I have a reduced requirement in Iraq. Unlike the insurgency in Iraq, we don't have enough troops there to hold back the Taliban, which is reconstituted, rearmed, regrouped. Lord, I hate war and I oppose war, and I don't think the attack on and assault on and occupation of Afghanistan was necessary. And certainly Iraq wasn't. But there is a little bit of that sort of hard-headed me that says, you know, if you're going to do it right. But not with this administration, not with this gang of screw-ups. They could screw up a one-car funeral. And unfortunately, there will be a lot more cars than that coming out of Afghanistan. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, this is Kate.
Hey, Kate, how are you?
I'll just call to thank you for the show today, and I wish that more people knew. I mean, I wish people knew this. We can interchange King George for King George, and I mean, I suppose people are starting to become aware of that, but they just can't admit that this is really happening to us or something. You know, it's so spooky. When are we going to have enough?
That's the question that makes the duck drop out from the fly space above the stage, Kate. I don't, okay. You know, the Declaration of Independence is a manifestation of enough already.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
I'm not trying to sell any of the hardships of the colonists in 1776 short, but I don't think they were having done to them in many instances what's being done to us.
No. I don't think so. I agree.
They didn't have a constitution to get violated. We watch it happen every day.
I was getting all over that one, but I want to wait and hear other people call in. I need to correct my spelling. I can't speak. I can't type. I said I don't know how to spell sweet tea.
Oh. Oh, sweet tea. Sweet tea?
Sweet tea. No. I must be talking Mississippi because it's sweet tea.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know how to spell it. I guess I have to practice with that. I don't know all the
tips. Consider it a failing. Consider it a failing of my ability to read phonetics.
You okay, got it. Anyway, I was thinking more about the sweet tea glass dripping sweat. Sweating down on the table, you know. Oh, Lordy, she was so good. Hope we get her back more often.
And the work that she does, She's a cactus needle about six inches long that is right up through the hide of just about every hidebound old boy network politician in Alabama. And you know what? I respect the fact that she doesn't give a damn if he's a Democrat or a Republican or a he or a she.
I'm getting that attitude down in Mississippi too, and so, you know, and I'm an outsider, so I can get away with more. Anyway, I gotta go. I'm gonna get dropped here by Verizon. We've been on way too long. Like, this is too witchy. So anyway, you guys enjoy yourselves, and I just put you a note that said camping. If I leave 20, 30 minutes, I can drive 2,300 miles. I'd stay up all night to eat anything you're smoking.
Well, I'm looking. The question is, am I going to get to eat anything that I smoke?
Probably not. Quit your bitching. Don't worry about it.
But I'm going to make a jar of my barbecue sauce that's hot like it ought to be, and I'm going to make a jar of my barbecue sauce that's all wimpy.
And you don't get to eat any of the macaroni and cheese. So there it goes.
No macaroni and cheese. There's going to be picnic tables absolutely plumb chock full of stuff I can't eat.
Poor baby. I know. It's awful.
But, you know, I'll be all right. I'll take a couple of cans of Campbell's chicken noodle soup with me and be glad to have them.
I got some mangoes around here. I'll stand over the sink and eat and let them drip down my chin and think about you.
The mangoes I could probably take a run at.
I'll eat two or three for you in the next 3 or 4 days, all right?
All right. If you run across a papaya, they say those have good stomach enzymes, so knock down a couple of those too.
I have two Mexican papayas in the refrigerator. Yes, they're going to get eat. They're going to get at too.
They're getting at. Kate, you take care.
Bye.
Bye. If I leave 30 minutes from now, I can drive 2,300 miles straight through to eat whatever it is you're smoking. You know what? I don't think I've ever had anybody get that excited about my barbecue. I take that as a high, high honor. And I'll do my very best. You know, Agnes and I were out and about earlier today. And I saw a smoker that just about brought tears to my eyes. Oh, it was nice. Oh, and nothing fancy. I was in the big box Lowe's store. I had to get some charcoal. And I hate using that chunk cube garbage. So I go to Lowe's because they're the only ones around that carry the real honest to God wood charcoal. And I got me some hickory chunks too. But on the way out, this thing was making it was like that Twilight Zone episode where the fundamentalist puts a dollar in the slot machine and all of a sudden it's tormenting him and possessing him and calling his name and going, Franklin, Franklin. Well, there was a smoker over down the big alley in Lowe's and was going, Hey Bob, come here, look. Nice black steel, good chimney, separate firebox. Oh! And you know what? The thing even came with an accessory where you can use your trailer hitch on the back of your truck to mount it on and take it with you places. Doesn't that have Mountaineer Field in the fall on a Saturday written all over it? Yes. Yes, children, it does. So, got a brisket and some pork shoulder, and I'm hoping there's not too many vegetarians, and some folks will enjoy it. Not that there's anything wrong with being vegetarian, but not a lot of vegetarian pulled pork eaters out there. Me, I'm having chicken noodle soup. Next up, I mentioned where we're going to be. Well, wait a second. Phone, okay, this will hold, but the phone won't. We'll go straight to the phones. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hi, this is Juanita.
Hey, Juanita, how are you?
I'm okay, how are you?
I'm getting by.
you get my message?
I've been gone. I was gone pretty much.
All the trouble with the computers and stuff?
No, I've been gone pretty much all day, so I haven't.
I'm
kind of behind the curve. I'll be catching up with everything.
I got to listen to you about a week. Half an hour this week.
You got what?
I got to listen to you about half an hour this week.
Your computer's busted?
I don't know if it's busted. I think it's something to do with the company.
Back up just a minute, because Peter Godbold has been internet crippled pretty much all week long.
Mm-hmm.
And he's
everybody I know has got problems. And I was trying to pay a bill online last night, and it kept saying, we did not accept this. Someone else has already paid. And I said, well, it wasn't me, you know. So I called him up. It was my homeowner's insurance. And he said, no. He said, we've been down for 3.5 hours. He said, I said, well, about how long do you think it'll take? And he said, I have no idea. He said, usually we're back up in an hour when we have this kind of problem. And he said, they may have to call other people in because, you know, the force is coming up and they want to get some money in. But this morning I got a message saying that it had accepted my check. You know, online checking.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
So, I don't know. But, nothing harder was working last night. It's just one of those things.
Well, I guess northern to north central Florida has just been getting slammed, so.
Yeah. Yeah, hey, they told me they can't even come out until the 8th. They told me they were backlogged, you know.
Well, we're at the mercy of the series of tubes, Juanita.
Pardon?
We're at the mercy of the series of tubes.
Yeah.
And just out of curiosity, who's your internet service provider?
Bright House.
Okay. That makes two now. Peter's connected by a company that I've never heard of before, and so are you. So it probably
well, it
figures.
Used to be Warner's.
Ah, really? It was Time Warner Cable.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I didn't understand if they sold our part or what, but anyway.
Well, that's like a lot of people up here. The cable company that they had their internet through got sold, and now it's owned by a company called Suddenlink. And it's all terribly confusing. You wind up having to change email addresses, and it's just a big pain. But thank God for the free market economy, huh?
Well, the way I can use it now, it went off completely yesterday. And then all of a sudden last night, the modem started having all kind of lights on it. And I was, oh, boy. And it let me go on about 15 minutes. And then what I have to do, I have to reboot.
I kid you not, Juanita, you are describing exactly the same kind of torment that Peter Godbold's been going through.
Okay. I thought about him, you know. I really did, you know. I thought about him. Bless his heart, he has to fool with it.
Well, he's waiting to see right now if his connection's going to hold up for the show or if we're going to have to connect some other way. So, it's very frustrating. It drives me. I'm really proud of the service we've got here through CityNet.
Good.
That, you know, it's not Verizon. It's not one of these great big companies. It's a West Virginia company. And you know what? Anytime I've got a problem, they get on it like they get on it like the devil's on their tail.
I did want to talk to you about that. Did you hear that tape that guy played on his show? The one with Laura Ingram.
No, I didn't, Juanita. I usually sit in and listen to guys' show, but today I had errands that had to be run, so I was out of the studio all afternoon.
Well,
and we got in here
was,
15 minutes before Mark Levine started.
It was about, you know, Wesley Clark.
No.
And about what he said. And it was so disgusting. It was a bunch of, that was a guy trying to say what he really said, you know.
Well, sure. Laura Ingram cannot open her mouth without being vile and filthy and disgusting. They pay her $1 jillion a year to be vile and filthy and disgusting.
Yep. And she told him, said, if you don't just shut up, I'm not going to let you come back on the show anymore. But
you say it was Wesley Clark on her program.
I don't know whether don't know who the guy was, but he sure was standing up for Wesley Clark.
Oh, okay, okay.
Of course, they were trying to interrupt him, you know.
Right, and of course...
And he kept on talking. But,
yeah,
no,
see, they don't like playing in a fair, they don't want a fair fight. They have to be able to talk over you or scream over you. Because if they shut up long enough, you can actually beat them to death with their own words, and they can't allow that to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And she said, oh, that just makes my blood boil. Talk about. And the guy didn't really say anything that bad. He just said he didn't think he'd make a very good president.
Well, it's funny. It didn't make Laura Ingraham's blood boil when they were, when the Republicans were wearing little Purple Heart Band-Aids at the convention
uh-huh.
4 years ago. And
right.
It didn't make her blood boil when they were sliming the service of, Senator Kerry. What a hypocrite she is.
Yeah.
Lordy.
And, I saw her, I don't know, a couple of months ago on, The View.
Uh-huh.
And she was part of hawking a book of hers, and, of course, she was saying all of her stuff. And she kept interrupting Barbara Walters. And Barbara Walters, you know, let her by. Well, Whoop is the moderator. And she just told her, she finally told her, said, let Barbara speak. You know, she did it very nicely. Well, next news you know, I've seen something, I think, on Buzzflash where she had complained that she'd been mistreated in that show.
Oh, for that poor baby.
And actually, they actually had a program about it, these two young people
uh-huh.
discussing, was she really mistreated on that show?
Dear Lord.
I said, my goodness. But I said, God bless. And thank you, Wesley Clark.
Yeah, for just speaking the truth. Because
yeah.
You know what? It's true. Getting shot out of the sky does not qualify you to be president.
Right.
I don't know how hard that is, why that's so hard for the right wing to figure out, but it just really doesn't.
But if you could have heard that tape that he played, it was so disgusting. It sounded like about five people. On a Laura Ingraham show.
Well, and again, but I wouldn't be surprised if it had been Juanita, because that again is how the sleazy so and so's operate. If you've got a liberal, they got to bring in five so-called conservatives because
yeah.
they can't stand a fair fight.
No. And when I look at Laura Ingraham, her eyes look dead to me.
Yeah.
She's a dead-eyed look.
Well, exactly.
Anyway, happy 4th.
Happy Independence Day to you, Juanita. Yeah. Y'all doing anything special?
I'm not. No, my son is.
Oh, really?
He's going to cookout, yeah.
Well,
No, I don't really celebrate holidays much. We used to, years ago, we used to have, like, family outings and all, you know, had a lot of kinfolk.
Uh-huh.
But I just got a few down here, and we don't associate that much. You know, they're just kind of drifted apart. It's just different.
I understand.
It's not like it used to be.
No, it's not. That's why I'm looking forward to where we're going. It's going to be a
yeah,
whole bunch of like,
yeah.
whole bunch of like-minded people, and I have a feeling it's...
Well, that's always good. You know, I caught the bus today, and I have to walk away to catch it. You know, I had to go to the grocery store. And there was a guy come out, and he looked like a good old boy, you know, like a what people would call a good old redneck or whatever.
Sure.
He started talking to me. He was so intelligent, and he was talking to me about the ecosystem and I don't know what all. And I said, you're really interesting to listen to. I said, not too many people know about that. But you never know where you're going to get, you know, somebody's really interesting.
Well, that's
but a lot of people wouldn't listen to him probably because they'd think, you know, well, that he was just a dumb hick or something.
Right. Well, people who don't want to hear things that they don't want to, who don't want their preconceptions challenged, Juanita,
will look for any excuse to tune somebody out who's challenging their preconceptions.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And the guy also said, asked, does anybody know people that just didn't want to think about it? And I do. My girlfriend that's right-wing, she just said, well, they know more about it than we do. They know more. You know, I said, well, I said, you know, God doesn't hide anything in the Bible about the people in the Bible. I said, he let it all hang out. So,
That's what makes it such fun reading. I remember when I was a little boy at my mother's knee, I'd say, you know, read me some more of the war parts, Mama. And off we'd go, and Joshua fit the battle of Jericho, Jericho. Joshua fit the battle of Jericho, and the walls come tumbling down.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, Juanita, even though you're not going to be doing anything in particular, I hope you have yourself a wonderful, wonderful Independence Day.
I will. You know, I'm at a stage of life. I'm happy. I'm contented.
Well, I sure understand
that.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Well, you take care of yourself, and I hope your internet service straightens itself out and gets all normal.
But if not, I'll just keep on turning it on and off.
All right, you take care.
I miss it, honey, when I don't have it.
We miss you.
I really miss it.
We miss hearing from you too. And I was wondering why we hadn't heard from you in a couple of days, and now I know why.
Yep, that's why.
All right.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Juanita.
Take care and have a good time.
We're going to try. I think we will.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Our buddy Juanita in Central Florida. Sounds like Florida's got internet troubles. Any of the rest of y'all Florida listeners had problems? Well, thank heaven Guy James was able to get on the air. Maybe it didn't extend down to where he was. I keep telling you, it's a fragile, fragile system. Listen, I got a little email quote for you. Just came in and from a relatively not brand new, but a relatively new listener who's registered in the chat room as Reverbo. Reverbo, I'll bet you is how that's pronounced. R-E-V-E-R-B-O, Reverbo. Says. I've been listening to your show since I discovered it last fall, and all I can say is great, keep up the good work. Never heard a format like this before where you can have 10, 15-minute conversations with callers. And you're singing to the choir with me. I was a registered Republican once, but I don't think I can ever vote for those zombies ever again. When have they ever put people in public service ahead of politics? And Reverbo sends along a quote from a wonderful sci-fi novel called by Richard K. Morgan, and I'm not familiar with this. I got to find it. Called Altered Carbon. One of the characters is a revolutionary involved in this whole political subtext, and she has a quote, according to the email. It says, "I think will really resonate with you and your listeners." Sure did with me. And at this point, it will be important to state that we all believe this to be metaphorical language in nature. Now, Mom, Dad, if little Timmy or little Susie are in the room and you object to certain words or don't want them picking them up at too early an age, this would be the time to sort of hustle them out of the room. Nothing particularly vile, just the F word. We can say that here on the internet yet because the government hasn't clamped down on free speech here yet. So, you know, be forewarned. This is great, and I'm not going to edit it, and I'm not going to censor it because it takes away from the force and effect of the piece. Again, a character from Richard K. Morgan's Altered Carbon speaking. And this really does go in with an Independence Day sort of theme. The personal, as everyone's so fucking fond of saying, is political. So if some idiot politician, some power player, tries to execute policies that harm you or those you care about, take it personally. Get angry. The machinery of justice will not serve you here. It is slow and cold, and it is theirs, hardware and soft. Only the little people suffer at the hands of justice. The creatures of power slide out from under with a wink and a grin. If you want justice, you will have to claw it from them. Make it personal. Do as much damage as you can. Get your message across. That way, you stand a far better chance of being taken seriously next time, of being considered dangerous. And make no mistake about this, being taken seriously, being considered dangerous, makes the difference, the only difference in their eyes, between players and little people. Players, they will make deals with. Little people, they liquidate. And time and again, they cream your liquidation, your displacement, your torture, and brutal execution with the ultimate insult that it's just business, it's politics, it's the way of the world, it's a tough life, and that it's nothing personal. Well, fuck them, make it personal. That's not a quote, that's a theme. That's one to hang on to. That's a selling point for Richard K. Morgan's Altered Carbon. And Lord, isn't that the heart and soul of what we talk about so much and so often? You know, without fail, when we talk about how the language gets tortured, without fail, when somebody looks at you and says, nothing personal, mind you, but... you can almost guarantee that what's coming next is damned well personal, really personal, incisively personal, that it's going to be, especially if it's coming from the mouth of a right-winger or a repig-licking or a practitioner or acolyte of the religion industry, you can guarantee it's going to be personal. And you're guaranteed that it's going to be an indictment of you and what you believe, and what you take for the articles of faith, or what you know to believe. See, I go back to the Declaration of Independence. That document, if published today by an American citizen, would get the Secret Service on them, would get on an FBI list, would get them on the Department of Homeland Security no-fly list, because that is dangerous stuff. It was meant to be dangerous, and yeah, in accordance with this quote, it's meant to be personal. Hell's bells, $4.10 a gallon gasoline is very personal. $4 a gallon milk is personal. Because you're not going to the grocery store on some sort of collectivist credit card now, are you? You are expected to bear the brunt of the failures and the inadequacies and, yes, in fact, the intentional misdeeds and crimes and felonies of the Bush administration on your personal back. It's personal. It's, you know what? It's beyond personal. It's intimate. It's intimate. The assault that is going on the working class, the middle class, the lower class in this country couldn't be more intimate. Because it compromises our ability to care for our children and our elders. It compromises our ability to get to work every day. It compromises our ability to, if we do get to work in a workplace that's safe and free of harassment. You better believe it's personal. When a repig-licking talks about wanting to bring in the right to work, you damn right it's personal, because they personally want to see you personally receive lower wages. Hell yeah, it's personal. The question, however, is, and you know, back to the Declaration of Independence, that thing is also a statement. Yes, it's made by a group of individuals, but it is a way of saying that it has gotten to the point of being personal. He has done this to us. He has shipped us. You know, there's that clause about he has shipped us across beyond the seas, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't say he has caused a few isolated individuals to be transported beyond the sea. It says us. It means that the offense and the pain and the agony was taken to heart, so much so as to engender revolution. They took it personally. But how many times have you looked at somebody and had them say, "Oh, I'm not going to vote this year. My vote don't make no difference. It's all politics. I'm not political." Peter Godbold addressed this with real genius last night on his program. I had tingles and running up my spine. Little hairs on the back of my neck standing on end listening to what Peter had to say. And he was talking about taking it personally. We're going to be, a bunch of us, personally destroyed individually. Oh, there may be group dynamics or group demographics. Well, you know, people making less than $19,000 a year really took it on the chin. That's a statistic. And it goes back, and I forget whether it was Stalin or some Nazi that said, you know, 10 people getting killed is a tragedy. 100,000 getting killed is a statistic. We get reduced to statistics so that we get called consumers so that we won't take it personally. Tell Michael I always liked him. It was only business. It's only business to the CEO of ExxonMobil. But only business is good for him for a couple of $100 million a year. But it's personal to you. The people who are monkeying around with the price of a barrel of oil on the futures markets and speculating on how much agony the American people can bear. It's just business to them. Oh, it might make their wallets a little fatter, but it's just business. To somebody who's making calculations in July about a coming October and November and December and January and the cost of heating oil, by God, what's just business to the speculator is intimately related to life and death on a personal level. So that quote, and thank you so much for it, that quote is the absolute, unfly-blown, unvarnished, God's honest truth. You want change, you'll see the change when you start taking it personally. Let's go to the phones. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hi, am I on? I sent you that quote.
Oh, wow, thank you.
This is reverbo. I got quite a rush hearing you narrate that on the air, I'll have you know.
Well, thank you. That took the four corners of the program tonight and just made a pretty little bow at the very top of it, because it's the very essence of everything we've been talking about.
Well, it really is. And on July 4th, it's funny because when I first started listening to your show, that quote came into my mind. When I read it the first time, I thought, you know, that is the only way anybody's going to get taken seriously. You can have, I mean, Milton Friedman and Bernanke and Alan Greenspan, and you can have all these people just kind of, you know, toss the ping pong balls in the hopper and pull them out, and like we're all playing bingo here. And folks, we're not. If you don't think there's people literally dying because of what you do, I mean, you ask those people with Hurricane Katrina. You ask soldiers in overseas. You I mean, Americans are just so idealistic. You wonder how much they can really take before they start seeing the light that even in our country, you will be sacrificed for political and economic ends. And if you don't think so, you're crazy. Just to have JFK and Martin Luther King, and I mean, you better start looking around and smelling the coffee.
Well, look at, I mean, 6 straight months now. And how would you prefer for me to refer to you?
Reverbo sounds pretty good.
Okay, Reverbo. Six straight months of the American economy vomiting jobs.
Oh, yeah.
62,000 gone in June. And, you know, that number's meaningless. It's a 6 and a 2 and a comma and 3 zeros. Well, hell, it's just 62,000. There's no human beings in there. The hell there's not. That's 62,000 cases of, and multiply it by children, and multiply it by a wife or a husband.
And rent to pay, and health insurance to pay, and gasoline now to, well, I don't know what people are doing. That's just, it's just crazy. You know, I was thinking on the 4th of July, too, how much this one particular part of what, of this game that they play really irritated me. I grew up in the 60s, which, I don't care what people say, that was by far the most exciting decade of the 20th century. I wouldn't trade it for the world. But I remember how they would just play that game about how unpatriotic the hippies were and how unpatriotic you were if you didn't support the troops in Vietnam and how if you didn't like it, you could just go back to Russia and all this crap. And how really, you wanted to not do that anymore. You were hoping that the lesson of Vietnam was don't use the soldiers like politicians, you know, the way they drop the kids out and they kiss the babies. Don't do that to the soldiers because I can support my troops and hate your foreign policy. But my point here is how they just went back and they're doing it again. Their concept of patriotism is just my way or the highway. And I'll tell you, I'm sick of it because when I think back, it's just like it is today. It wasn't, I don't know how, yeah, I do how old you are. You told us you're about 45.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, I wasn't the reactionary. My friends and I, the people who objected to the Vietnam War, essentially, who may object to war, not just because it's morally reprehensible, but I don't know when the last time you ever needed to go out and buy a tank. I mean, this constant being at war is ridiculous. But anyway, they're trying to tell you that you're the one who's the reactionary, you're the radical, right? We were the ones who were unpatriotic. And I'm here to tell you, no, actually, you were. I know, I can spot the phony a mile away, and we were the patriots. If you care about your country, and you care about the Constitution, and you care about what's going on, and don't like to see it circling the damn drain, well, that's a patriot to me.
Yeah,
I'm getting pretty wild. This just drives me crazy. They look at you and they go, "You're not a patriot," and I'm thinking, "You ought to be quick pointing your finger at me."
I got a quote here that I didn't get to run this evening. From the right-wing columnist by the name of Tony Blankley.
Uh-huh.
And I saw this as I was preparing for the show, and it was another one of those, you know, oh, God, I'm going to start screaming now moments. This guy had the nerve. It was the Diane Rehm show, radio show, and she was asking folks about their definition of patriotism.
Okay.
And Tony Blankley chimed in and said, "I would take it to another area where I think patriotism is slipping. People who have views on the environment may feel that they're more loyal to the environmental principle than they do to American advancement." Holy cow. Caring about having an America to hand on to your grandkids, in this little right-wing thug's mind, is now unpatriotic. I mean, and they get away with this. They can declare, they declare patriotism. And they burn Natalie Maines in effigy and run over records with bulldozers because it wasn't patriotic enough because she criticized the president.
Oh, sure.
You know,
and there's still, I don't know, it's 2008 and you just think it's 1308. I don't know why people are just so continually appallingly stupid.
Well, I'll take it another step. It's 1938.
Well, there you go, too. Hey, I recommend that book. The scary part is that, it, you know, it takes place, I don't know, 500 years, 800 years in the future, and they're still fighting against corporate greed, and they're still, well, you read the quote, it's still the same damn thing going on, you know, in 2018. It's kind of depressing, Bob.
Yeah, well, it is, but okay, this may be overly simplistic, but let me just run this one up the flagpole and see if anybody salutes. It's kind of depressing the way looking at your sink is depressing, because there's always dishes to do, or looking at your laundry hamper. You know, the laundry doesn't do itself, and the dishes don't do themselves. They have to be manually, personally attended to, and you know it's an eternal struggle. But for some reason or other, we can look at the sink or the laundry basket and understand that we got to keep doing the laundry and keep doing the dishes. But we look at corporate America and say, well, you know, I went to the march last week. I'm done. It's perpetual. And so I'm not surprised that they think that fight is ongoing. You know, that's where the power is concentrated. But, you know, maybe the Vietnam, I agree with a lot of what you said about the 60s and the anti-Vietnam War movement and Richard Nixon and the Watergate. But I've said before, and I will stand by what I say, that one of the fundamental failings of the people who helped bring about the end of the Vietnam War and the people who helped bring down the thug presidency of Richard Nixon is that, you know, as is so often the case, when you've got somebody on the run, you think, well, we've made them retreat, we won. And you stop and you pop the champagne bottles and you say, well, we certainly saved democracy for another day. Meanwhile, these thugs are regrouping in the woods.
Oh, you have to go house to house. You're absolutely right. I had a little talk. I was talking to my son about this earlier today. And, yes, you're relieved. You know, you win an election here or there. You know, Bill Clinton shows up or Jimmy Carter shows up or... And you just think, whew, oh, we don't have to worry about that for a while. Let's go back and let's see if there's anything good on TV. And in the meantime, you're right. These people are, they've hardly served any time in jail, or they've all been pardoned, and they're regrouping to come back again. And here they are right now.
Yeah, and if we sooner or later we'll run them to ground and figure out what's got to be done, but, yeah.
Sometimes I think if this next election, if it isn't just an absolute landslide, I will be stunned. I guess that's just wishful thinking.
Well, we want it to be. We hope it'll be. But remember, the 2006 congressional elections, there are many people who are learned people. They're not, people who analyze statistics for a living and play in the numbers fields. Who say that actually, when you take into account the electronic voting machines, the 2006 congressional election should have been a landslide, but, you know, it was just a modest victory because that was enough to keep the status quo as it was. And we sat back and went, yay, we won.
Yeah. We'll see if there's a game on TV now. Yeah. you're taking the day off tomorrow then, huh?
Yeah, taking the day off, and it's going to be a long weekend, and I'm going to focus on being an amateur meat smoking chef, and I'm looking forward to it.
You take a day off from your diet too, don't you?
It's not really my call. It's more my insides' call, you know. And if it rebels, you know, I can't argue. So I'm just going to not start the fight.
Well, sir, can I call you again sometime?
Anytime you want to, I promise.
I really enjoyed our conversation. Any interesting things to send you on the internet, I'll do that too.
I hope you will. I look forward to it.
Okay, Bob. Well, keep up the good work, my friend.
I certainly will, and you do the same.
All right. Have a good one.
You too. Bye now.
So long.
New buddy Reverbo. That was a great quote, and we're running out of time, but I want to share a new word with you, if I may. This comes from our buddy Tom out in California. He says, the other day my son coined a term for the state of the nation. It's not totally a theocracy. It's not really yet an overt out-and-out condition of fascism. It's not, well, it really is, but it's a hidden oligarchy. It is, and this is the word of the day, an Orwelliocracy. Tom says, pretty good for a 15-year-old, huh? An Orwelliocracy. Write that one down. That's good. That's real good. So that's where we end it, and we'll be back Monday evening. On his way, the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio host, Peter Godbold, with another edition of Strictly Confidential. Guest tonight, Henry Stone, and you're not going to want to miss this. Thanks to John Fox, Peter Godbold, to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch. I'm sincerely looking forward to seeing a bunch of my friends this weekend. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.